This podcast is brought to you by Random House Audio. Experience books like you've never heard them before. Press play.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
We can confirm.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
All right, everybody, open up that reply window and get ready to press post. Another Weekend Confirms coming at you. My name is Garnet Lee. Glad to have you here. We got a great show. We're going to launch right into it. I have the two Jeffs here. Mr. Jeff Cannata.
Hey, happy to be the two N's, one T half of the Jeff and Jeff Wonder Twins.
And he's activating those powers with Indie Jeff Mattis.
Yeah, what's crackalating, mofos? I'm happy to be the second half of the Jeff duo.
So which one of you turns into water and things, and which one turns into animals?
I'm probably the moist one.
I just turn into a pile of fear.
And Mr. Christian Spicer is here as well.
Yay, I'm happy to be the one part of the...
Now with
you add the spice.
Now with 50%, now with 50% more mic return gain.
Yay.
Excellent. Hey, so tons of stuff to get to. We saw our first look at Assassin's Creed 3 in action, which we're excited about. We've got, what else are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about some Terra, because Jeff's been playing that, and I've been playing that. Christian has been getting into trouble with some pixel junk stuff. Walking Dead, again, 30 weeks in a row, Walking Dead shows up on someone's What I've Been Playing. And Jeff's been into a game that intrigues us because it's called Saturday Morning RPG.
Oh, yeah.
We like the sound of that. We definitely like the sound of that. You guys last week did not like the sound of us talking about another iOS game. And against Jeff's better judgment.
Let me just stop right here and say, you have to figure out a way to refer to us differently, because you've said Jeff's been playing that and Jeff's got this other game and Jeff.
No, it's great.
Nobody knows
who
we're
that way
about.
You can just blame the other one.
Yeah, that's what I always do.
Plausible deniability.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, continue.
It.
Yeah.
Against Jeff Cannata's better discretion.
Now you're on.
I'm going to launch into this discussion very briefly about Kickstarter, because it's something that's been very, and as we talked about in the pre-show vid, which I think Ryan will probably have included some of this conversation in there. This is not solely in response to, although it did create quite a catalyst for some folks, the discussion last week about Republic. Which, by the way, when I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, none of us had spoken about it, and I didn't realize everybody else was going to chime in and be like, oh yeah, that's awesome, we should get behind it. It was sort of just a natural happening. And this brings up the point about what Kickstarter is and what it isn't. And what Kickstarter
is it?
What Kickstarter isn't is it's not a stock exchange, nor is it an equity proposition. So, you know, the fundamental problem that comes up in some people's minds, as I understand it, is that if we talk about these Kickstarters, if we talk about people who are investing investing is the wrong word, because even I accidentally do it. If we talk about these projects that people are excited about and put money towards buying the games or whatever they are with their tchotchkes, then somehow we're going to be colored by enthusiasm that we want them to be successful. So
I think
the only success that we want any of these things to have, and I'll get to you, hold on.
Sure.
The only success, it's for instance, I loved Borderlands. I really want Borderlands 2 to be successful, but that doesn't mean that when it comes out, if it's a dog, I'm not going to say it's a dog. And the same thing applies to Kickstarters. Like, all I'm saying, if I were to have put money into, which by the way, I actually have not even put money into a Kickstarter yet. Although I really should for some of them because I like the games. All I'm saying is, hey, I like a game that you say you're going to make and I would buy it, much as if I walked into EB Games or what are they now, GameStop, and put $5 down on a game, except instead of the $5 going to GameStop, who then goes plays it on the day market, you know, it goes directly to somebody who's trying to make it and then they sell me the game. But if that game is successful, they're not going to come back and pay me a dividend. Like, if I put money into a Kickstarter for Shadowrun, let's say Shadowrun turns out to be really awesome and those guys go on to make a mint. Nobody who put into the Kickstarter is going to get a dollar.
Now, the one exception to that rule, I think for me personally, would be if I invested money in one of these games.
You didn't invest?
If I donated money to one of these games.
You didn't donate.
Well, bought into.
You bought the game.
Right. Bought the game.
Here's the problem, though. Here's why people get confused, is because really you're not donating. It's not a charity. And you're not investing because you're not going to get any equity.
If I contributed money to one of these Kickstarter projects.
If you bought the game.
Well, yeah. No, but I don't know if that's necessarily true if you're always buying the game. I think if I submit bought into the a Kickstarter for $1, I doubt I would get the game. I'd probably get a sticker or something. Like, you're buying into any, something.
Now, keep in mind, I'm not the Kickstarter expert, but I haven't seen any that weren't...
The Kickspert?
That the baseline wasn't, you get the product. It's always like, you get the product, and then after that, you get the product plus this crazy tchotchke.
No, there's definitely below...
But it's usually like a $5 or $10 tier or something like that.
Well, at that point, I don't know why you're even paying in.
Okay, so anyway, the point that I was going to make, though, is if some of my money made it into a Kickstarter project and that project got made, as an editorial person, I would probably recuse myself from reviewing that game when it came out just because of that.
Because you paid for the game that you're reviewing?
Yeah, because...
So how many games have you paid for that you reviewed?
Well, a number, actually.
But how many games have you not? See, here's another
guys,
weird thing.
Right. I feel compelled to step in here and say that I think the objection, such that it was from last week, centered more around our plea to contribute. It wasn't.
Ah, okay.
It was more like, "Hey, guys, come on, please." We were really advocating for purchasing.
You think that's what it was?
I do, and I think that felt like that. I think that for what it was worth, for the people that it rubbed the wrong way, it rubbed them the wrong way because we weren't just making them aware of it. We were saying, come on, just do it. You know what I mean? Which feels a little...
Well, I hadn't thought about it from that perspective.
Yeah. And
because
I think
really
that, maybe,
like that
maybe we... Yes. I mean, I believe... I'll just speak for myself, and I think I probably said something along those lines. And I don't think... For me, I think it probably came across differently than we intended it to, and it really is because, you know... Ryan came on, he talked about the game, we all got excited about it, and we felt like it needed help to keep continuing.
But that's...
And we were really trying to help out our friend, a guy we respect, and a game that looked really promising.
But if it doesn't sound cool to you, there's no reason you would buy it. I mean, again, that's the thing, it's right. Like crazy, you're not even investing. It's like, I might invest in a company on the stock market whose product doesn't have any appeal to me, but I think would be successful. But I would never buy into a Kickstarter because I would just be buying... I mean, why would I buy something I didn't want?
Your example about Borderlands 2, which is a game that you want to do well.
Yeah, because I
want
it to be cool.
But you would never come on the show and go, come on, guys, just buy Borderlands 2. Just buy Borderlands 2. Come on. You wouldn't do that.
Well, no, but it's a different... I mean, Borderlands 2
beast.
Has a whole marketing machine behind it.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, yeah. It's a completely different
beast. I have
beast.
Actually told people they should buy games before that I thought were good and overlooked.
Right.
Like Binary Domain.
And like I said, I feel compelled to sort of represent what I perceive to be the complaint, which is why I don't even think we need to spend too much time on this. I think the important thing is we acknowledge that, we recognize that, and...
Well, certainly, dude, absolutely. Like, look.
It was not our position. The thing you are trying to convey, Garnet, is that we get no financial reward from it.
Yeah, I get nothing out of it.
Yeah, it's not... We're not gonna, you know...
If Republic is a huge success... None of us will get a single dollar out of it. And if it's an utter failure, none of us will be out anything other than if we bought a Kickstarter for the game if we don't get it. Or if we get it, then we, like anybody else, bought a game that we didn't like.
If you want to be cool, you should probably contribute to it. Everybody's doing it.
Anyway, I think we can.
I apologize, by the way, because I did not realize that. If I was blind and like just woke up to the fact that it was because it was sort of like, hey, you should do that. I certainly apologize. Anyone who took it that way, I totally apologize, because it never crossed my mind that if you didn't like the game, that it would be something you would do because you're just buying a game.
Right.
I don't know.
I think that closes the book on that.
All right. So and then another day we can have the discussion about how you guys who out there who listen and read games media, you just have to decide for yourself whether you trust individual people or not. I mean,
right.
I don't know what to tell you. You know, it's a weird business because we're coming up on E3, and look, everything that we do in our media business on the side of telling you about games prior to their release is dependent upon a relationship with a publisher, because they hold, I mean, look, they're making the game. They own the assets. They own the developers. They hold the access. It's not like you just can like walk down the street and walk up to Treyarch and go, hey, I'd like to come in and talk to you some about Black Ops.
But at the same time, Mattis and I went recently. Capcom sent us to Las Vegas to their event.
Correct.
We went to Las Vegas.
Namco.
Namco Bandai. Oh, excuse me. Pardon me. Yes, Namco Bandai sent us to Las Vegas. We went to their event. We covered it. We had a great time in Vegas. Yes, we were having a good time on their dime.
Mm-hmm.
But we talked about this there, and just socially, not specifically this event, but in general, I never hear journalists, quote unquote journalists or game enthusiasts or whoever's covering an event talk more shit about things than at events that they get to go to for free. It is not the case where people are like, wow, we get to go here. I'm going to totally say nice things about this.
Yeah.
It is almost the opposite. It is literally like, well, I didn't pay for this, so fuck that. You know,
that's because a lot of game journalists are also just curmudgeonly.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. So I think that people get the wrong idea about, you know.
Bottom line is, you read all our stuff, you see all our stuff, and you have the acid test in your hands, because ultimately the games come out, and either you can go, wow, what the hell was he talking about? Or, oh, okay, so he was actually telling me what he thought or her.
And
so,
if you guys get upset, what I do personally is I take a step back and drink some refreshing Arrowhead water. And then I head over to IHOP Arrowhead for water. A Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity for only $4.99 at IHOP.
You're not actually endorsed for any of those. You know, you're not actually getting any.
Anyway, though, there's a lot of really great games we can talk about also.
Has anyone not seen The Avengers?
I plan to remedy that this weekend. But yes,
you know what? We're really not going to spoil anything, by the way, because it's awesome.
There's like a lot of super.
Can we talk about the Wii U Kinect game?
Oh, we're going to talk about that.
I cried 3 times during the movie, and then when that game got announced, that was the 4th time the Avengers made me cry, but for the wrong reason. That's why it made me cry. Then I was like, "This sucks."
So the Avengers was stupid awesome, by the way. Like, it's
you're half right.
It's. You hated it?
I was saying that the stupid part is not right, but the awesome part was.
You know, I sort of. Do you read Ben Fritz at all?
No.
Ben wrote an interesting story, and I don't remember whether it was like on a forum or whether it was actually a thing that he wrote on LA Times about how our standards have dropped because, you know, the Avengers is like this crazy awesome action flick, but the character development and story is not there at all.
Which what?
I disagree. Easy boy.
I will easy. Show me where he is.
However, I walked out of that movie, it was like 2.5 hours long, and
it's one of the most entertaining films ever.
Felt like 20 minutes.
Right.
I was
this leading up to a video game discussion.
And when Spider-Man showed up, I was like, "Oh, sorry, Jeff."
I was like, "I couldn't believe Batman was there." Like crossover. I walked out of there with thinking 2 things, and both of them are disastrous. The first one was, man, that was amazing. They really should just like take a couple of years off. And of course, there's already Iron Man 3 and Thor. Oh my god,
Thor 2, Cap 2.
Yeah. Thor 2, stay far away. Thor was, I'm glad I saw Thor. Like, you were so right. Watch Thor because it's great for the Avengers. Don't watch Thor because it's a good movie.
I didn't say that.
I thought Thor was great, especially considering what it could have been.
Wait, why are we talking about this?
It's one extended effect shot.
So good.
No, but you know,
the
weakest link in Thor was the Natalie Portman ingenue thing.
Her friend.
There was no character development in it. Anyway.
Exactly. Anyway.
Anyway, we just, Jeff's like,
I want to talk about video games.
Jeff's like, what the fuck show am I on? Yeah. Is this totally rad show? What are we doing here? What are we doing here? The other thought I had was, man, that was such an awesome show, and it was so lend itself to a great game. Why isn't there a video game? And immediately my head clicked and went, oh, yeah, that's why. Yeah, maybe we're better off without one. And that's sad. That is really, really messed up. So
I think the Amazing Spider-Man game is going to be great.
The Amazing Spider-Man game.
I'm hoping.
I have the Spider-Man games down here in this discussion as somewhere in between. So I think on the one end, you've had the recent Sega games, which were Iron Man 1 and 2, and then that Thor game, which was just dire. It was dire. And they were, you know, they were cranked out. They were movie tie-in games that are really the ones that we really loathe. They're exactly everything we loathe about doing that sort of tie-in. And then in the other spectrum, you've had the 2 Rocksteady Batman games.
Right.
Which just
and Hulk
are
Ultimate Destruction, not tied to anything, and awesome.
And I think all the Marvel Ultimate Alliance games were pretty cool. I thought those were pretty
They fun. Were pretty good.
Marvel Ultimate Alliance
and
games?
The X-Men ones.
Activision did?
Yeah, the role-playing action RPG ones.
Yeah, the top.
Yeah, they were fun.
Group.
They were definitely fun.
They were super fun.
They were definitely fun. I didn't
think about
play
them
the
I get them mixed up in
couch
my head,
co-op,
though.
Dude.
Like, they're all the same, pretty much.
Yeah.
I didn't play 2. I played 1 was fun, and then 2 was a little more, and then there was the one that Silicon Knights did that we've all forgotten recently.
Yeah, what is it?
It's that X-Men, the Silicon Knights game. Remember it was like a little blip on the radar there?
Oh, where like you didn't play as the X-Men and you were some creative character. And
X-Men
and it looked like ass.
Legacy or something like that, yeah.
All right, but we could say that the Spider-Man games were good because they were sort of in that middle ground. You've got the Batman games on one end that are fantastic, and then you've got the quick movie tie-in games that were not successful.
DCUO.
How hard was it? I mean, what happened with Avengers? And we know that THQ actually. Did you guys see the alpha footage of that game THQ Australia was working on?
Shooter, or not shooter, but first person perspective. Yeah. It looked really cool. Alpha build.
First, for something that was like proof of concept and then moving into like an alpha phase, I'm like, yes, that looks really cool. And the other thing I'm wondering is really, there is a point at which, coming out of a movie like that, that while I wouldn't be thrilled about it, I would be perfectly happy if someone had just looked at Rocksteady's Batman and said, how the hell hard would it be for you guys to do that game and put Avengers in it?
The Amazing Spider-Man game is that. That's what the Amazing Spider-Man game, granted, not the Avengers, but it's for the Amazing Spider-Man movie that's coming out.
Okay.
I'm just saying, I'm excited
and
about
And Spider-Man
it.
Games have been good in the middle ground.
Right.
But realistically, when you thought about an Avengers game, even before and this Captain one that we're going to talk about in a minute, what was your what's your gut response to, wait, there's going to be an Avengers game?
And the Captain America game last year
was kind
was
of a Batman.
Basically that.
Yeah, when I picture a multiple superhero game, I immediately go to the Marvel Ultimate Alliance stuff. Yeah. That's exactly where I go, because I don't know that there's been another good game that's utilized multiple superheroes before.
I don't know if it's
City of Heroes, MMOs? MMOs? Why not an MMO?
Well,
DCUO! City of Heroes!
Well, Freedom Force was awesome too, but those
Freedom
were
Force. Fake.
That's what I just threw out there. It's like,
yeah. DCUO is excellent.
I feel like maybe I'm getting old.
Lest we forget Raptor Man.
Because I just...
Raptor Man.
I don't need a movie tie-in game. Like, Battleship has a movie tie-in game. Why?
It has a movie tie-in board game.
Yeah, and
it's
a video game.
It's called The Transformers.
Game. Well, I don't get it. Like, I loved the movie. It was great. And I watched it, and I'll probably watch it again. And I'd love an Avengers game down the line, and I'd love it to be great. I don't need it to come out a week before the movie comes out, or that week.
Exactly.
I don't need that anymore. But maybe kids do. Maybe...
There's definitely something very cool about being jazzed at a movie, coming home and going, oh my God, I would love to just be one of those guys. Oh, I'll pop in this game and kind of get to be one of those guys.
Yeah, but in those cases, the games are product placement disguised as a game, or marketing disguised as a game. It's like, hey, remember this movie's out.
You know, I'm going to probably regret bringing this into this conversation. However, there were things about the concept behind the Matrix game that I thought were really, really interesting.
The Matrix MMO or the Matrix...
Enter the Matrix, the Atari one?
Which was going to bridge and tell the story about what was going on outside of the movies between 2 and 3. Now, granted, 2 and 3 weren't that good, and the game was not that great either. The idea, though, of in this rich universe, this rich fictional world, where there's more than can be told in a 2 or even a 2.5 hour story arc, that what could we do with a game? You know, how much more could I extend? And I don't – where maybe –
The new Star Trek game looks good in that respect.
Yeah, well,
that's a bridge title, like between the two, whatever the
bridge,
next.
Yeah. Star Trek.
Make it so.
That actually looked really good last year too at E3. It was one of my little like behind closed doors surprises of the show.
Jeff's maybe only saying that because we saw it in Vegas and we were like, oh, it was a train game.
but we were in Vegas and we were like, oh, you know, the normally this game would be but
they fired up the bridge over at the Hilton again. They're like, oh, is Seth still here?
But maybe they'll do that with the Avengers, because Avengers 2 has been greenlit, air quote greenlit.
Surprise.
But it's going to be years out. So how sweet would that be if in 2 years or next year we get a badass Avengers game to hold us over until Avengers 2 comes out, and at some point, you know, some other bad guys come in and the Avengers got to beat them up, and it kind of carries that momentum
forward. I'm
ready for
forward. That. Let's do it. Boom. Green-lighted.
Green-lighted-ed?
Actually, that's the correct way of saying it. But
I think it's difficult. I think one of the challenges that superhero games fall into is that at a core elemental level, video gaming is a superhero experience most often, even when you're...
True. Yeah, even when you're just an average dude.
Exactly. So...
Nathan Drake is totally a real everyman.
He bears no resemblance to Spider-Man.
So it starts to pose a lot of challenges as you're, you know, as you're a gameplay director and as you're a narrative director trying to figure out, okay, now I'm giving the player this experience where they're hopping into this character and that's already very empowering, but I've got to take it up another level. One of the things I remember talking about in, you know, 4 or 5 years ago with the ill-fated Superman game was them trying to approach this question with Superman, who's arguably maybe the most difficult superhero to do because he's so very powerful. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you do that in a game and have anything that can stand up to him that's interesting without, you know, having it immediately being the nerf? I mean, it's right off the bat, it's the same thing with the movie. It's like, oh, we got to take all your powers away and make you vulnerable because otherwise you're fucking Superman.
Well, I'd make a Superman game about solving puzzles with powers as opposed to combat because of that reason specifically. Like, you're right. Superman's badass unless you equip all his enemies with kryptonite. He's pretty
Superman
much
Superman teams up with Professor Layton.
Yeah.
this was
super latent.
A buddy of mine, Ed Greer, and I'm probably missing his whole idea, but I don't know if we're there with AI and rendering yet, but his idea for Superman game is make it a real open world with just stuff happening everywhere, mm-hmm. and you have all your powers, and you need to save stuff. And so like maybe it's not failing or winning, but you kind of compare how good you are, how many things you saved versus your friends or something like that, where it's like all this stuff is going on in the world. What are you going to do, Superman?
You know what
would be are you going to do?
As if it like Superman super hearing, you just have like a cacophony of terrible shit. Like, what do I choose to do? Oh, it sucks being Superman. Why do I have these powers?
God damn it, I can't turn it off. I can't make it go away. So that is sort of the MMO thing, though, right? Well, that was like Raptor Man's deal, right?
That was Raptor Man's deal. He had so much going for him.
And yet why did you leave Raptor Man? Why have you retired Raptor Man?
Oh, boy. It's a complicated... it requires 3 movies and then a
prequel of some sort.
A couple of video games in the middle.
Pitch me on the story, if you will.
Of Raptor Man?
Indulge me. Why? What? As we're taking this little look at superhero games,
mm-hmm.
based off of the excitement over Avengers, what was it about what happened with you and Raptor Man that eventually had you put it down and go, you know what, I'm kind of done with this. I don't really play anymore.
This feeds directly into the fact that I'm going to be talking about Terra later, but...
At least he didn't just say, Segways, oh my God!
No. I mean, I assume we're not going to be able to talk about Terra in this segment. We'll have to move... We have to go into...
I can bridge it over the gap.
Yeah, bridge it over the gap, dude. Come on. Get on the bridge like Star Trek. I think that as much as I really loved the character creation stuff, the superhero MMOs nail fun character creation. Because mm-hmm. there's nothing... I mean, every kid that's ever loved superheroes has come up with their own, has, you know, gotten a sketch pad, and if you're like me, poorly drawn some kind
super bendy guy.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if you're like Spider-Man, you did that, and then you sew an amazing real-life costume together, too.
Well, it helps to have a spider bite you that gives you powers. But, yeah, so that stuff is all excellent, and I thought the traversal stuff in DCUO was fantastic, and I also thought the action combat was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it was the treadmill of their mission structure, quest structure, felt a little repetitive pretty quick, and it didn't hook me into that world. You basically have Metropolis and Gotham. And as interesting as those places were where you ended up going, I think for me, the MMOs that get me hooked over a long period of time offer a lot of exploration. And I'm on record on this show saying that's really one of the things that I like about video games in general. So it's no wonder that I like them in MMOs where you have a whole world to explore. But mm-hmm. where things get varied up regularly, you're experiencing new locations and you're getting new powers and new abilities as you ramp up through to level cap. And then at level cap, you've got lots of interesting new dungeons to explore to keep you hooked there.
So just being in the DC world wasn't sufficient.
It wasn't enough for me. As much as I love comic books and I love superheroes, I just didn't feel like their treadmill, their progression system was meaty enough to keep me hooked.
So what do you guys then think about this idea that the Avengers game that we do know about now isn't the Avengers the movie game? It's, and Christian's nodding his head. He's not very happy about it. It's the Avengers based off of the comic book series. Now, I don't know anything about the comic book.
What I'm not fine with is its platform. I'm getting Star Wars Kinect flashes is what I'm getting with this game.
For those of you who aren't familiar, the one that's been announced is the Ubisoft game, and it is coming out for Wii U and Kinect.
Yeah.
And promises... all kinds of motion-controlled heroic actions.
Because I think it was in their press release, it said, because that's what these superheroes are doing. They're always fighting and moving and bouncing around the room, and now you can do that. And it was, no.
Yeah, Thor's a mighty good dancer. Now you can be, too.
Yeah. Like well, there could be a Thor and Hulk dance medley, which, you know... That works for Star Wars.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
The comic books are great, though, and the comic books have had several years of great stories in the past.
Several years? How about 60?
No, not most of those have been bad. Only two, three have been good. Only several years. Many years of great storytelling in the comics for them to pull from. So that's not an issue for me.
Well, Secret Invasion, I would guess, is the name of the series of Avengers books that this will be based off. I imagine it's only one segment of the Avengers library, right?
Yeah, it's Brian Michael Bendis wrote this sort of mini series called Secret Invasion, and I mean, I could tell you about the plot, but it's not really that important. But yes, it's one single Avengers storyline. But I think the more relevant point is, you know, one of the things that we've all been raving about, Walking Dead, not mm-hmm. based on the TV show,
right?
Based on the comic book, mm-hmm. right?
Could be great.
Could be great. And I don't think that just because it's not going to look like Chris Evans, it's still going to look like Captain America. And it might be better because it
they're free. They're free to make the Captain America of the comic books.
Right.
So what about the action part? What about – and also interesting, by the way, Kinect and Wii U being lumped into the same category – not exactly what I would say one in the same. Kinect having a full body sensor and Wii U being ostensibly, I mean, it still has the motion controller, but ostensibly about using this tablet.
But my guess is it's going to be using traditional Wii motion control uh-huh. and integrating tablet stuff very minimally, if at all. I don't see these being two drastically different games between the Kinect and the Wii U. So that's my out on a limb guess that this is going to be a flail fest, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of am picturing, you know, old Chris Farley down by the river and Hulk smash.
Man, that Wii U tablet must have one hell of a wrist strap on it. If you're going to be...
It's a full body strap.
Yeah.
So not excited about the idea of any of this?
I am not.
I think that's a little premature.
I am not.
Yes, it's a little worrisome to think that...
Not excited at all.
But you are have no, based that on zero information.
I'll tell you
I
my concern.
I based it on two pieces of information.
Yeah.
Kinect and Wii U.
Right.
Well, my concern stems from Kinect. And here's why, is I think that an important part of games that have not been conquered, as evidenced by the Star Wars games, is movement inside an adventure game controlled by Kinect. But
I think that's the difference between me and most people, is that I hear that and I go, gee, I hope they nail it. I hope they prove to be the one guys that figure out how to do that.
Well, me too, but it doesn't mean I'm excited about it. I'm not going to get ramped up and put it on my queue and like wish list and get and you know hype it up and you know can't wait for it to come out. I hope they do, but I'm not going to waste any sleep thinking about
because
it.
Because could they get the lightsaber battle right, all of us would be geeked out for it. All of us would love that.
Every single person that saw the announcement of the Wii way back when
immediately thought,
lightsaber game, oh my gosh, it's going to be great.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
Just because it hasn't happened doesn't mean it couldn't happen, you know?
Yeah, it's too late. it's done.
The water's been poisoned, folks. Well, I think that idea of the water having been poisoned figures in here some, because now we almost have this, you know, immediate instinctual reaction to, oh, it's going to be Kinect and Wii U. It's not going to be good. We'll see what happens. There's a lot of time to come, and hopefully we'll see someone at E3. We got a lot of stuff to see at E3 coming up.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And we're going to do
but
that.
But one thing we're not going to see at E3.
Oh. Well, I don't know where
Shock Infinite.
Oh yeah.
Mm,
yeah. I wasn't really going to talk about that. We could talk about that later.
No, that's all you need to say is that we're not going to see it. And we're not going to...
There's some speculation. I tell you what. Take a little break. We'll come back on the other side. And when we do, we'll pick up with Bioshock Infinite before we start talking about Terra and MMOs and I don't know what else. Stick around. We'll be right back. This week's episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Random House Audio. Here's a sample of Amped by Daniel H. Wilson, read by Robbie Damon.
I'm impaled on the blunt knee, breath rushing from my lungs. I wrap my fingers around the plastic-encased metal arms, pushing with every fiber of muscle I have. Even with all my strength, I can't breathe. The thing leans its face in close to mine. When it speaks, I can see that inside those shrunken cheeks is nothing but purple gums and a worm-like tongue. Valentine won't go easy, Zenith. It hisses.
Visit www.randomhouseaudio.com to download something new. Wow, I really don't even know how to follow that up. That was really dramatic.
I love audiobooks.
Yeah, and you're working on one. That's pretty cool, dude.
Yeah, I am. I'm recording one. Yeah.
Impressive. Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. I hope to be able to tell everybody how to get it very soon.
So speaking of, we were talking right before the break about the announcement. Ken Levine wrote a very nice note on the Bioshock website to all the fans that, hey, Infinite's being delayed. We're going to be out in February of 2013. And of course, there was some disappointment. There's also been a lot of response of, hey, maybe this is going to be a good thing. Maybe this is going to give them more time. Obviously, they spent time on Bioshock, which he noted, all the improvements they were able to make to get it just right. However, there's also been some cynicism that maybe this was a publisher's move. Well, multiplayer, which it seems evident that multiplayer, we'll get to that in just a second. Mm-hmm. But also that publisher 2K has Borderlands 2 coming out. And could be, you know, really trying to clear the decks because they're probably also going to have Grand Theft Auto 5 this fall. And you know what? It makes sense not to also drop Bioshock Infinite in there to fall.
I think that's a great idea. And I love when games have the, have their own space. I feel like February isn't going to be crowded, especially compared to October, November. And it'll be a game that I want to be able to have focus on. And maybe I'm, maybe I am in a different position than most people who buy most of their games around Christmas, but I think that's a really nice thing to have the game have its own little area of time to be able to get a lot of attention.
We all talk about it, and hopefully it'll be good. I think that actually the spring started to get pretty popular, so I wouldn't be surprised. It won't be there by itself.
Right.
There will be other games as well. The multiplayer thing you spoke of stems from, first of all, we know Bioshock 2 had multiplayer in it. And as a matter of fact, Minerva's Den, which was really a, really one of the strongest pieces of DLCs that's been made for anything, was a multiplayer DLC piece that came out. And
I think those the roller coasters, multiplayer with those roller coasters, that looks, that would be pretty fucking fun.
So there's an ad on LinkedIn where Bioshock's development house there at Irrational is looking for a senior network engineering person. And one of the things that they described was experience with multiplayer, also title storage. So, you know, title storage is this cool thing that you can do on Xbox and PS3 has something similar where you can have a file that holds a bunch of variables sitting on the server. And rather than having to push an entire title update, you can change those things and squirt a update to the game without having to go through certification. So they could be doing some dynamic stuff in their multiplayer. And I don't know, what's your guys' thought on Bioshock Infinite, the idea of having multiplayer in it? What would you, are you excited about that? Are you wary of it?
I want to go on the record and say, before everyone else gets excited about it, that Jeff is already excited about it. So before that happens, before he can say he's excited about it, I want to go on the record saying that he's going to say that he's excited about it.
You know, I knew Christian was going to say that Jeff would be excited about multiplayer for Bioshock last week.
Here we go.
I think it could be great. And can we trust? I don't know if he's the head of this, but he has done me no wrong yet, kind of thing. So if they're taking time and they're doing this and it was their decision, this feels like a pet, not a pet project, but a passion, a project he is passionate about.
Did you check out
any
of the plasmid versus plasmid fights in Bioshock 2? Now, the novelty of it wore off pretty fast, so I think that it was maybe undercooked a little bit from extended development time, but the idea of plasmids versus plasmids is like there's a lot of stuff you could explore that'd be pretty fun.
Yeah, keep in mind that's not even the same.
And we don't even know there can be plasmids in this world
or anything.
Yeah, and if this team's been thinking about ideas to make something cool in this type of universe since Bioshock 1 or whatever they've been doing, there's a good chance it could be cool.
What if it's a metagame? What if it's all about the ongoing civil war on Columbia?
Or if it's back in the 80s?
So are you
like
following
those flashback periods?
Does that girl follow you around the entire story? Because I mean, wouldn't there be a co-op opportunity in there somewhere?
Well, we're not exactly.
All you have to do is follow the person in front of you.
Just saying.
My game sucks.
Well, no, but I mean, they'd have to do some sort of mechanic. I mean, she's opening rifts and whatever.
By the way, Dead Space 3 also leaked out. Dead Space 3, well, actually, EA only confirmed that there's going to be another Dead Space game. And I kind of have joked a little bit, but it seems like this is the like game that's checking off tick marks almost somewhat, because it's keep in mind, these are all rumors, but it's rumored to be that Isaac's going to be back, but he's going to have a co-op partner. And his co-op partner is going to be, you know, someone who, if you're playing single player, would lead you around. But if you're playing with someone else, you could do stuff together. I mean, I'm sorry. It's EA. I couldn't help myself from thinking of Army of Two. And I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
And, of course, Resident Evil has sparked this whole, like, everybody co-op in survival horror. But I don't, like, does survival horror really benefit from co-op?
Yes.
Yeah?
It can, but that's, but Resident Evil... Dead Space isn't really, it's way more shooter than it is.
So maybe it fits there, but does that then undermine the whole idea of them having been survival horror? I mean, I think about Silent Hill, and I can't imagine Silent Hill as a co-op experience.
Well, those games sort of traditionally undermine themselves. They like, here's a really scary setup, and then halfway through the game, you're like, man, I blasted like 20,000 demons or whatever, and you're just like, you go into the next room, you're like, okay, here comes some more demons.
When you watch a horror movie, is it more fun watching a horror movie by yourself or sitting next to someone? It's more fun going, oh my God,
watching it with somebody else, because I wouldn't watch it by myself because I don't like horror movies.
I think the idea of horror and having someone on the other end of your headset going, oh my God, did you hear that? Yeah, I heard that. Okay, get ready. Get ready. Here they come. I think that's fun.
If they separate you, I think it would be even more fun. Like if there are actually parts in the game where you're like, okay, you have to crawl through this vent shaft while I go down here. And meanwhile,
the majority of the game should, that'd be awesome. Cause then you're playing online with someone and all you're playing and you're just kind of in a silent part. And then all of a sudden you hear your friend be like, oh shit, like freak out at something that you don't see. And you're like, where I'm up to your right. And like that, I think that's how it could be done. But I think if you guys are going down the same hallway together, chances are you have one guy that's just steamrolling ahead and like they trigger a scare and you're not there yet. But I like,
yeah, you play with the wrong people.
You'd have to tailor. Hey,
we're friends now.
Yeah, we are.
Yay!
Like that, you play with the wrong people.
Not after just, this episode.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing it all wrong. Oh, and it's supposed to take place on a snow planet.
Snow planet.
Are they just using
Lost Planet?
Lost Planet.
Yeah, Lost Planet.
So you got co-op, Lost Planet 2, a little bit of Resident Evil in there, some Army of Two maybe happening, and then you wrap it all up in Isaac and call it Dead Space 3. Wow, that was a viciously silly troll, wasn't it?
It was.
I like two. I like two a lot.
You ready to stand by that and say it with conviction? I kind of
like
two.
The voice.
No, I mean, I did. It wasn't Game of the Year or anything, but yeah, I thought it was a fun shooter and had some, you know, cool, scary, gross stuff in it.
And it had multiplayer.
Speaking of multiplayer,
yes.
I've been playing an MMO this week.
You look so excited. You should see Jeff's face. He's like,
I did the thing. The segue thing that you do. I do it. I did it.
And then you did the segue thing that you do when he does the segue thing.
I did it.
You called out
everybody, look what I did.
I did sort of open the door so you could walk right into that, didn't I?
You did.
All right. So, Tara, I'm playing Tara also.
What level are you?
I am. You know what? I've had so little time to play.
You saw it?
I'm going to start.
You know what?
Wait. Did you guys see the dome yet?
The dome.
The Terra Dome.
Heyo!
Heyo!
That was terrible.
All right, sorry.
That was.
But I got every single one of you.
I've not run into Tina Turner either, so thankfully it's all okay.
Two men and a woman.
So, but seriously, what level are you?
What's love got to do
with it? I am a level... I'm not even level 10 yet.
Like, oh, dude, you haven't even started. You haven't gotten off Noob Island yet.
No, I'm on Noob Island. Yeah. I'm on Noob Island.
Level 11. Until you get to Velika, don't talk to me. Velika, the shit... Okay, so
I'm going to start a new character, by the way.
Yeah,
because,
I wanted
because
to.
You're on a different server, and I wanted, like, now that I know you're playing, how high in level are you?
I have two characters. My main is 29.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And my main is a berserker. I have a 29 berserker, and I have a level 14 priest.
I'm never going to track you down, am I?
I want to start a new character. Here's the thing about Terra,
I want to start an archer, because I have
Alex is an archer. It's awesome.
It looks fun, because I've been watching lots of characters play, and, like, the archers look really cool. And then I'm playing a Slayer. I love the Slayer.
Yeah.
She's super fun.
Here's the thing about Terra we should say right away. So, first of all, amazing looking, probably the best looking MMO on the market. Yes? It is stunning.
Depends on
you. You haven't been to Velika. You don't know. Why am I talking to you?
You
haven't
help.
Gotten your mount yet. You haven't gotten on a Pegasus.
Son, you need help.
Here's the thing.
It is very pretty.
And I say that to say this, which is...
Slayer chick who has
of
like...
Of course it's a chick.
Who has like some bronze covering one of her boobs and a little bit of clothes on her other side.
To say this, which is, it has an unnecessary level of over-sexualization and it's almost embarrassingly gratuitous.
Are we talking actual nudity or just like...
Oh, So first of all, there are at least three races in the game that are just there to give you, like, you know, strippers and sluts.
Right.
Forgive my terminology.
So you have three characters.
and it's so gratuitous. Like, they wear nothing.
Is your berserker showing some shaft?
And then when they run, their run animations are, like, bending over and sticking their ass at you and running. And it's embarrassing. There's one whole race that's just a little schoolgirl. It looks like a little Japanese schoolgirl.
So let's talk about that.
Their race classification is that they don't age.
I think that's
creepy. Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's a whole... So that's obviously a play for lowlies. And if you go and look at the changes between the Korean version of the game... Because one of the things that's interesting about what Enmas did with this game over the last 2 years, folks, they've been 2 years localizing this, is they did a tremendous amount of changing the game at a level deeper than just like, oh, we just translated it. And they still left them pretty, they're pretty, the lowly thing is in reference to Lolitas. And like, I think that...
It's disturbing on a certain level.
Right. And it makes me feel bad for
me
wanting...
Too.
It makes me feel weird for wanting a hyper-sexualized adult character, which isn't creepy. It's maybe a little prurient, but it's not creepy, because then I look around this world and all of a sudden, like, this supposed to be like a 12-year-old girl in a weird costume and skirt.
But even the adult characters, like, they're literally in bikinis and okay. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I have no problem with that.
It's not.
I'm an adult. I like looking at hot chicks. I'm sorry.
But it's not my girlfriend walks in and I have to justify my playing this game. And the game is very good. I like it a lot.
If she walked in and you were watching Skinamax, would you have to justify that?
No. I mean, she's cool, but.
And this is way, way lower than Skinamax.
It's just like the worst.
By the way, I mean, it's nice to know that you're cool.
Do you actually even watch Skinamax? Does anyone watch that shit?
No, because they never move that lamp
from
the
shot. All the porn in the universe is on the internet.
That's
it's super
exactly
easy to get.
True.
Okay, but, so I was pulling as a reference, though. Why do we have to be embarrassed about...
Because
why should it be embarrassing?
It's the worst cliche of what video games are. And I don't like progressing that cliche. Because it's like... Because every dude who's playing as a hypersexualized... like unrealistic model type chick is some guy in his basement eating Cheetos, yada yada.
But I don't like Cheetos, and I'm not in my basement. And
exactly.
I love having this like super cool hot chick in this crazy ridiculous armor that she would never fight in, wielding a sword that's like 12 foot long.
Yes,
and doing crazy super moves.
Okay, I think we started talking about the wrong subject here, but okay. I feel like I want to start a new character because I want to be a human.
Okay,
and for
so
the
we can
first
that,
time,
why,
humans look cool in a MMO.
The whole Alita thing and the way people respond to this is an interesting, you know, it's a thing. It's really a thing.
It's
bigger than video games. I mean, it's not a video game thing. I mean, it's everything. We portray sexualized versions of both sexes, men and women, ripped dudes and scantily clad women, and we put that out there and people consume it. And
this conversation is a microcosm of my issue with this, which it overshadows what is a very, very good game.
Okay, and I'm going to talk about all that. But if it didn't have the Lolitas, do you think we would still respond? Like, if it was just, look, there have been a bunch of MMOs that have scantily clad adult type characters in them where we responded a little bit, but then we moved on. But this one's getting a huge amount of conversation. And I think it's specifically because there's a line that's clearly crossed there.
Yes.
Clearly crossed. And it was very poor judgment.
Overt sexualization of an underage archetype.
Exactly.
And that is.
It's not cool.
It's not cool.
I'm not down with it. I will say that I'm not down with it. And it bugs me. And by the way, that reminds me, Jeff, don't let us go off this episode without talking about Oliver North.
Oh, yes.
Because we didn't do a good job about that last week. And right. I agree with being taken to task. That,
speaking
so we'll
of underage
so we'll come
sexualization.
Well, I meant controversial subjects.
Yes.
And I don't know how to make of that because I really enjoy the game. And then I want to be able to play my hypersexualized cool chick with a sword who's badass. But then I feel extra guilty about it because I look around the world. And then, like I said, all of a sudden, like, here goes this prancing party of three like little girls going by, and I'm like, yeah, that's not really cool.
Yeah.
Am I being a prude about that? Because
no,
I don't feel like I'm a prude.
I'm the one who brought it up. I think across the board the game is unfortunately hypersexualized, and I think that does it no favors.
So how do you respond to this? Because I've actually been reading a lot about this because I've been trying to formulate how to feed an editorial into the team to get someone to tackle an editorial on this subject. Is the response that a lot of folks who play those characters is that, oh, you're taking it all the wrong way. They're just supposed to be cute and silly and fun and childlike.
That's probably the exact justification that whoever put those characters into the game in the first place used to a certain degree, I would think, right? Or at least when selling it to other people, like, yeah, no, it's,
I mean, they're called the Ellen, and I think that their catchphrase is something like, they're like ferocious and something like nature, or I forget what it is.
Yeah, they're a little furry, they have a tail, but the game has fantastic animations,
yeah,
across the board, and some of the enemy types are animated, it's just spectacular to behold. But I mean, it's really to claim that these are not animated in a sexualized way is just false. It's just false.
And then I feel sort of like a hypocrite as well, saying, oh, well, that crosses a line, because then it's like, okay, now I'm putting my judgment on somebody else. But then again, it's like, I really find it hard to accept that it's not supposed to be like kids.
Yeah. Well, let's
really
move on from
anyway,
that
because the game is a lot of fun.
The game is an enormous amount of fun, and it is. they've succeeded in on a lot of levels. Principally, I think the action combat. You know, their big tagline is pure action combat. And I think I've been playing with a controller. Have you been playing with a controller?
So one of the things that's exciting to me is that I've had this computer for a little while, and until I move, which I'm only like 2 weeks away from moving now, is that my computer is set up in a place where it's not conducive to me sitting up to a mouse and keyboard. It's sort of on a coffee table in the side. It's like, but this, because I can play with a controller, I can like sit back on my couch, play with a controller, and it plays. It's a great, it's really
they
conducive.
They nailed it. I mean, this could be on a console for sure. I am completely proficient with the controller, and it is action combat. It plays like a third person action game. You press a button, it does an attack. Well, that attack either hits or doesn't hit.
It's an interesting hybrid combat system they've come up with across the board, both adapting it to controller and adapting an MMO skill-based progression system, combat system to action combat, because you still have skill bars.
Yeah, but I'm not watching my cooldowns, dude. I'm not watching my cooldowns. It's exactly what we were talking about.
I'm not watching my cooldowns, bro.
Well, it was last week we were talking about this concept of, you know, how to change up the holy trinity of MMOs. And I think an offshoot of that is one of the things I'm very interested in is how to change up the problem I ended up having with the Old Republic, which is it's just like WoW in the sense that I'm staring at numbers ticking down and then pushing another button. And I am not doing that with Terra. Yes, there are still cooldowns on some of my skills, but what I'm doing is I am aiming my attack. I am pressing a button. I am shooting. And if the guy is not where I aimed when I get my attack there, I miss.
But there's
like an action
game. It's doing some pretty big hitboxing.
Yeah, but it's pretty not like WoW. It's not like where you select and you keep selecting.
Like
there's
WoW
no auto attack.
No.
You can chain certain skills to others so that one skill feeds into the next and you get these awesome chained skills that all proc to one action button. So it becomes very much a third person action game. And it's enormously fun. I love the combat in this game. It feels...
The chain combo system is pretty cool.
It's super cool.
And it's nice that they give you a taste of it at the beginning, because when you start off at the game, and I didn't realize this at first, but you start the game and it's a little abrupt. And actually, they sort of mishandle the beginning.
I have very mixed feelings about the prologue. You're talking about the prologue.
The prologue, you don't really realize... They're not very deft at handling explanation of what you are or what's going on, because they drop you into the game at the beginning and you're a high level.
20. You're level 20 when they
and
start.
So it lets you play around with some of the things in the game, but they don't give you much direction on how it's happening or what's happening. And it's really just sort of a, here's a little taste of what you're going to be later on.
Which is excellent for very experienced MMO players, because you can try out a bunch of different classes and you'll have a bunch of their skills, so you can go, oh, this is the class I
like.
Think
about that. That's really
but
cool.
But new players, it's completely overwhelming.
It's got to be baffling.
Yeah.
Because I'm somewhere in between, and I was a little off-put at first, and I was like, oh, I see what's happening. This is going to be one of those, like, you're super for a minute, and then some shit happens, and then sure enough, yeah, okay, now I'm back to level one, and I can start my progression going. And then on the noob island, as you put it, it's really evident how much work and mass put into making this the experience of WoW. Because it is the same sort of spoon-fed quest giver to quest giver, walk you along through a number of quests that, by the way, while we're showing you quests, we're also going to teach you about some of the systems in the games and how to interact with people. And that's a great learning experience, I guess.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to be able to move through it a little more quickly, maybe.
Well, I think you level very fast in this
game. You do level pretty fast. That's the other thing, is they've obviously changed the Korean leveling scale completely to make it westernized. I mean, as I understand it, the Korean version of the game is much like Lineage in that it is, you know, very grindy, and this is not grindy at all. This is get in and have fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting quests that give you ridiculous... It's really, you level by questing, for sure. It's not...
Well, in playing.
Right,
fighting.
But I mean, the you're not going to be just killing mobs to get XP. You're going to be killing mobs to turn in quests, because the quests give you enormous amounts of XP. So it's not – it's much more, like, as you say, quest to quest to quest rather than just grinding.
My experience so far with the Slayer has been really fun. The Slayer's mechanism is that – so there's of course, health, which is your – there's two bars, health bar, and then there's a mana bar, mana-like bar. And
you also have stamina. which is a new addition that this game brings to the table.
Oh, that's right. I do have stamina. You know, I haven't run into any problem with stamina yet, but I think it's because I'm still on Noob Island.
Well, you get stamina constantly goes down,
right.
And you can only recharge it by standing next to a campfire. And you can build campfires yourself, or they have them in towns.
Got that.
And as your stamina goes lower, your health and mana bars will actually get a lower maximum point.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it's important for you to keep them up, but you can also throw charms into fires to give you buffs.
Right. So I got that. So there's a bonus. So there's actually a bonus to losing some stamina and then recharging, because when you recharge, you can add stuff to your recharge location to make you better the next time you're buffed up.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a cool cycle.
And they do a really interesting thing, too. You haven't gotten to this yet, but the skill system is very different. It's you earn skill points, as you normally do in most MMOs. After level 11, I think, you start earning skill points every time you level. But all the skills in the game for your class, you buy from a trainer. They're called glyphs. And you can assign them, and each of them requires a certain amount of skill points. So some glyphs will be 4, some will be 7, some will be 6. And so you can allocate those points however you want, and you can respec any time. So it's not a tree. You can mm-hmm. buy all the glyphs right away. Some of the glyphs you can't use until you get to a certain level. But then you sort of figure out which ones you want to apply to certain skills, and then it'll reduce, you know, casting time on certain things, or increase the crit rate on certain things. So it helps you out in different ways, but it's not a tree that you're putting points in.
You know, what's interesting is that this game is still very much an MMO at its heart. And so getting back to that combat system is that it's still about using your skill abilities in combat. So with a controller, you know, if you're worried about that, with left bumper and right bumper modifiers, you've got easily access to about, I don't know, at least a couple dozen buttons. So you're going to be able to map all the skills that you ever... I haven't run into anything that even when I was dropped in as a level 20, there was plenty of ability to use those. You can set up the chains. And the thing I think is cool about the chains is when you get the chain, you were talking about it proccing to the enemy. But what's cool is once you have them keyed in, is a hotkey will pop up in the center of the screen, and you don't have to... So you don't even have to do modifiers or anything. You just hit the button that you've assigned to that, so you go into your chain animation. And yet at the same time, it's not just like playing Devil May Cry. I mean, you still have a sense of, oh, I just used this skill, I just used this skill, I just used this skill. So it's still giving you a reward for knowing how to use your stuff. Yet at the same time, you're still tactically maneuvering around your enemies. And, you know, I'm really enjoying just sitting back on the couch and fighting.
Right.
And I don't usually – that was not the case with Star Wars.
Right.
For Star Wars, I was definitely not having that fun anymore. I was like, oh, they don't like this so much.
I agree, dude. I'm sort of over WoW and Star Wars because it is so much – I'm staring at my skill bar. My – what is it called? Freaking
– skill bar.
Yeah. At the bottom of the screen. I'm staring
You're
at that and waiting
for
stuff to count down. And in this game, I actually looked in the menu, and unfortunately it doesn't seem to be an option. But I was like, how can I remove those bars from the screen, because I don't need them. I do not need to see them.
You know, the UI in this game, for the amount of time they put into it, I have some qualms with the UI.
Well, it's very much WoW. It's very much any other MMO. You can move stuff around the screen, which is really nice. But
yeah,
it's,
and there's some scaling options.
And they do some really smart
even
things.
Even with all of them, I haven't figured out how to make it work. Because keep in mind now, because of the way I have it set up, is I'm playing this as if sitting on my couch, as if it's a console game. I'm sitting on my couch. I've got it on my television, which is, you know, 1920 by 1080. So, you know, it's a good resolution, and yet I can't adjust the UI to where I don't have to, especially on some of, like, inventory management screens, go get up in the face of my television like it were a computer monitor, because all of the texts and all of the, like, windows are all sized as if I was sitting at 24 inches away from a computer monitor, not 60 inches away from a television screen.
Yeah.
And I wish
that's true.
I wish that they had at least thought all this stuff out.
The UI scale in the menu.
Yeah, trust me. I've been playing with all kinds of like scale adjustments and readjustments and trying to move stuff around. And I just maybe I can find the right one. But one of the problems I'm finding especially is like inventory management. And then it brings to mind how much work must go into good UI design for console games.
Yeah,
because part of the problem is just like the lack of contrast between the text and the backgrounds on the inventory screens and that sort of stuff, because it's set up to look pretty if you're up close on a high-res monitor. But back far, watching a television, it just doesn't read.
There's a couple of other things I want to bring up. First of all, I want to reinforce the fact that the game is gorgeous.
You really like the way it looks.
I really do. And I hate the fact that this is the case, but that goes a long way for me. It's not
just...
Why
do you think that that's the case?
Exploration. Well, because if you're exploring something, you same want reason to be Jeff like Risen. Like,
yeah. I mean, that was it's a little bit of a, you know, what's the old graphics...
Graphics horror?
Yeah, I hate them putting horror at the end of stuff. But
No. But in a game where exploration is key, like, you don't want to be wandering around a bunch of, you know, bland, flat.
It is stunning. One of the things you can get if, you know, pay $10 extra, get the collector's edition, or you can just pay $10 now if you already have one, is you can get a lion mount. And oh my God, it looks like the lion from Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. I mean, it's epic, and it, like, its mane flaps in the wind as you run, and it roars, and but there's so much, like, the cities are stunning, and all of the enemy types are so cool, and the art design, I just got to this sort of Tim Burton area with, like, these guys in top hats that kind of look like the Mad Hatter and these wild jesters. And there's this other area, this swamp area with frog creatures and, like, little dudes that are carrying enormous dudes on their back and, like, straining under the weight. And all of the death animations are so cool. I cannot say enough about how great looking the game is, which for me is a big deal. Secondly, they do a really cool thing too, where they have these things called BAMs. Have you heard anybody talking about BAMs?
Big ass monsters.
Big ass monsters, yeah. Right? So it's sort of monster huntery. It's basically a giant world boss that's just hanging out, not in a dungeon, and you'll get quests to kill a couple of them, and
BAM!
It's epic battles and really cool animations with those giant monsters. And I just did my second instance. The two instances I've done so far were both really, really satisfying and fun.
All right, I'm going to build a character on your server.
Yeah, do it. So Forest Valley is where we are. And you have the Totally Rad Guild. So
how about that story?
What story?
The story of the game. We talked a lot about that here. It's awesome, amazing story.
Well, that's the thing. I wish it had the storytelling of Star Wars, because I haven't read a single fucking quest. I haven't read one of them. And it's a shame because there's a lot of really great humor. I can tell because items are named funny things and quests are named funny things, but I'm not reading a damn thing.
It's kind of backwards localization in that typically we think of localization as just the translation. And here they did a great job with that, but they did so much proper westernization of game systems and making it, making it an appealing game to the way we want to play games. That we've really fallen into the Western trap of just clicking through the story. Ah, click, 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 click. Goodbye. See you later. Yeah, there's some shards, some fantasy on an island. There's some powers, mystics, demons. All right. Moving on. What am I supposed to kill? How many?
Any voice work in it at all?
There's little cutscenes that happen on the big main story quests. Okay. And they have some. And the action cutscenes are pretty cool. But
I'm kind of bummed, Jeff, because I swore that I would not pick up another MMO for a long time.
Oh, great. Who designed this one? Who'd they consult in this game so you won't play it?
No. I'm just... but I'm saying it sounds like, okay, might have to.
Well, here's
this.
The problem for me is I'm hooked on this game. I love it, but I know that freaking Diablo 3 comes out next week. Mm-hmm. So am I supposed to do?
I don't know. Yeah, what are you supposed 3? To do? Because Terra is one of those games that falls into the subject line of games that... Do you ever really finish them?
No.
And I want to check in on that question when we come back for the second half of Weekend Confirmed. Your head nodding a little bit. Hey, so MMOs, of course, fall into this category, rapidly expanding. And as a matter of fact, they're at the vanguard of the free-to-play movement, which has been, you know, a part of a bigger movement that I think some folks who look deep have noticed of games in general becoming services. And Cliff, if you happen to follow him on Twitter, had, and I think this is the real Cliffy B. Is that, isn't it? Something like that?
I believe so.
Something like that. Yeah, anyway, he had a very interesting tweet yesterday that was games as a service. Yeah. Actually, that's me. I wrote that part. That was the part I wanted to remind myself of. His tweet was, in a world where games are becoming services, we may see a day in the future where we say, remember when you could actually beat a game? I don't know that I really like that. I don't know that I really feel good about that. And I think that we're talking about MMOs, that if I, and as much as I'm enjoying Terra right now, I wonder how long I will stick with it, because I think one of the things that ultimately was the reason that I set down WoW, even though I was having fun with my friends, is that I had gotten to the end, and at the end, air quotes, because I had gotten to 60 and I was doing end level instances, yet I wasn't getting any payoff. I wasn't, well, I was getting payoff, but I wasn't getting that I beat the game. And I wasn't getting that. By their very nature, these games can never close their stories. They can never have that big moment and that all those pieces that come together at the end that I relish.
That's how games started, though.
Yeah. Well, if their server populations drop to nil, then they'll do something. We're shutting it down. Here's a big in-game explosion.
Video games started where you couldn't beat them, right? Yeah. Couldn't go into the arcades and beat Pac-Man.
You could roll it over, though.
But no one has ever done it, right?
That's true.
But I think you're doing this conversation a disservice, because that's a bit of a distraction in that those games are wholly different than what we're talking about here.
I agree.
I'm a big fan of the end game. Like, I like endings, and even on a game I love, I'll get to the ending sometimes and then have a hard time going back and playing side quests or other missions because I've seen the ending. Like, I'm trying to think of the most recent example. Oh, I haven't done all the side missions in Batman. I loved Arkham City. I loved it. It's one of my favorite games of all time, of recent memory for sure. And after I beat it, I went back and played some, but I didn't, 100% it. And why is that? Now, I don't know if I would like a game where, if that type of game, not an MMO, but a single player experience that just kind of keeps going. Part of me is like, yeah, that'd be awesome because you get to keep playing. But then I'm like, I've talked about it before on here where I like rewards for the things that I do. And so I think you'd need some other form of carrot to keep you going.
Yeah, as much as listeners joke about me finishing games, I actually try to and enjoy finishing a fair number of games. Like, one of the rules that I set in place for myself a long time ago, doing this job as a member of the media, was to remind myself to finish games, because it's by finishing games, by work. In the line of work, we're starting games all the time for coverage stuff. But when I'm playing on my own, even if it takes me 6 to 8 weeks to finish a game because I only have a limited amount of time to play on my own, is to get in, pick those games and finish them. And I really enjoyed Yakuza is a great example, also like Batman, where, hey, I just finished it and I had 36, 37 hours in it, loved it. But the percentage clock on it was so low because there's so many other things to do in it. And while those were fun, I'm not going to go back and play with them much.
Yeah, it seems like most games these days, with collectibles, they'll get you, finishing the game will get you 40% or 50% if you're lucky. And the rest of it's all collect 100 widgets or whatever.
Well, if you enjoy the pure mechanics, which is kind of what I was trying to say with the arcade reference, the pure mechanics can be a joy in and of itself, even if there isn't an end goal.
I agree.
And I think...
And I'm there with Terra right now.
And I think... Exactly. And I think Cliffy B's comment... speaks more to the multiplayerification of video gaming in general, in that, it's more about you're never going to finish it because it's about getting together with your friends and doing an activity. It's like you never finish basketball.
But also as simple as how do you do a single player game as a service?
Right. Right. But I think as people are having more fun with their friends, it becomes an activity rather than beginning, middle, and end experience like a film or a
I think
book.
You need to figure out what that thing is. I think one of the smartest things Call of Duty did was prestiging, where you can never end, but there is an end, so to speak. And I prestiged 4 times and stuff like that. Where there's
you did?
No. I did not. I think I did in Modern Warfare 1 once, but ugh. Anyway. Ugh,
but you were experimenting, you were young, you needed the money.
I was like, I'll do it. So I think there is something about a hook and a reward and an ending, or a bragging point more than anything else, where you're like, yeah, I did it. I did it. Whatever it is, I did it.
I wonder if there's not, and we've talked about MMOs needing to evolve some, because it's set format. I wonder what they couldn't take some pages from the example that Telltale sets, especially in episodic content, by having some like the whole thing of an MMO is that you have this fantastic world, this fantastical world, near future, sci-fi, fantasy world, whatever it might be. And then the problem that I see so far is that everything about that game, in order to make it persistent and something that I can play and Jeff can play and I can start today and Jeff can start in 6 months, is that it's just a bunch of little quick hit dots along the way that we always fall in and have to be able to play all the time because a level 3 character has to be able to come in and play the level 3 stuff, and those are very quick posts. Well, what if you had, you know, storylines that were episodically taking place in these fantasy worlds?
Exactly what Blizzard is doing. Exactly. But what WoW is now.
But I think doesn't the MMO audience pay more attention to, isn't their end game like max level cap? Like basically, like, yeah, you get to level cap. Because you're, I don't know. I mean, I guess there are people that are really, 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 really into the fiction and stuff.
Sure.
But it just seems that the race, the people that are like, oh, I want to finish this game, they're the ones that are level capping and going, okay, yeah, I'm going to max out a couple more characters, and then hopefully they'll raise the level cap by then.
I don't know. I think you guys are underestimating the love of the lore, especially for WoW, because I mean,
WoW is its own
messaging. The messaging for Mists of Pandaria has been, yes, we know this is a cute and cuddly episode, but this is the episode right before we go dark again. We just had a bunch of dark episodes in a row, and this is the story is a setup for the next bit of
I think that the scale
scale
of those episodes in the way Blizzard does it is much too large for what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of smaller.
Well, each patch is an episode for them. It really is. It continues the story.
Saying. Yeah. I see what you're saying. I think that they are uber scale, you know,
because when Cataclysm comes out, you don't fight Deathwing when Cataclysm comes out. That's three episodes later. Right. And each of those episodes comes out as a patch. To it. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
I understand where you're coming from. I think that though what they're doing is on a big, large world scale, right? And I'm saying, what if you had a world where you had a few designers who were constantly working on smaller arcs in each area of things that were happening, so there was like some sense of things being different at times, and just world things happening in the game that you could come to, because I think that's sort of an untapped ability to tell some stories inside these worlds that aren't just, you know, the same story of every time you go to the Barrens, you're going to get the same set of quests and the same set of quest givers, and then move on from the Barrens to, I don't remember what was after that, Thousand.
Well, but then the episode comes out, like I referenced Cataclysm again, which rends the whole world in two, and they went back and changed all that early stuff, and now that you can't play the stuff that you used to be able to play 4 years ago, and you know, I think they do a lot of that.
I think there's room to do something different.
I'm not going to argue with you there. For sure, there's room to do something different.
I think that. Yeah, I don't know. Just watching the way people have responded, I'm starting to pay more attention to the way people have responded to The Walking Dead, because, like I said, like Christian wants to talk about Walking Dead, and this is the third week in a row where you're having this adventure game that is, you know, people want to get excited about. I was listening to Rebel FM the other day, and one of the things that I thought that was pretty cool that Matt brought up on that show was how if you take these episodic games one way, you can look at them as a fun way to do what we used to do with save games, where you'd play, you know, away and you'd have saves where like, oh, I'm going to try this, oh, I'm going to try this, I'm going to try this. Well, because the game's episodes in and of themselves are not that long, it really encourages you to play around with different alternatives of what to do in them. At the same time, you know that the next piece is coming, so you're always sort of moving forward with the story.
Do you do that, though?
I haven't played it yet.
Oh, you should.
Oh, you need to, yeah.
It's really good.
Really good.
You do it in a sitting.
And it's really short.
Yeah.
Which is appealing to me also.
Yeah. It is like watching an episode of the show or whatever.
I feel like it's a great example of playing interactive media where people, you're not really doing anything. You're just watching cutscenes and making a few choices. It's kind of, I think, the best realization that I've played of an interactive choose-your-own-adventure, where most of what you're doing is choosing and not really adventuring that much, but the story, the writing is really well done. I think the character animation and the graphic scheme they chose for this game is really well done. I personally think the story is more engaging and more involving than almost every episode of the TV show. I feel like it really hits the comics tone well. It's graphic.
Yeah, you're like the comic
dark.
Super fan.
Oh, man. I love. Yeah. I have so many of them signed by Kirkman. I'm such a nerd. I'm like, hey. He's like, hey, you again. I'm like, yep, let's do this. I wish he knew my name.
You should just change your name to you again.
Yeah.
It's me. Solve it.
It's really good, Garnet. You should. It is. It's digestible. It's playable. It's air quote scary. It's suspenseful. I found it meaningful with the character relationships that you make. And if there are listeners out there that haven't played it, it's $5 and it's way better than a Happy Meal.
I will say that without spoiling anything, some of the decisions you make are really not all that like different.
Impactful.
Well, see, that's why
different paths to the same destination.
Yeah.
That's why I don't play it twice, because I don't like knowing that.
Right.
I'm like,
so
I played it. I feel like it was awesome. I kind of wonder, like, oh, what would have happened had I done this? But it's like, no, this is what I did, and I'm going to move forward.
Do you
with
get
it.
The vibe? That was weird, because I was just listening to the Rebel FM guys talk about this, so I'm curious whether this applies to you guys as well. Do you get the feeling of like Indigo Prophecy from it?
I mean,
because I've watched people playing this, and I'm not sure that I do. Because so part of the thing is,
I understand what that connection, but it didn't make when I played it. I had never made that connection until you mentioned it.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't necessarily having watched people play this. The one thing that worries me is it starts to tread into where it wants to have a little action in the game, but the action sequences watching over someone's shoulder, mind you, look more hokey and tense because they're a pain in the ass to interact with than interactively engaging and tense.
I bought into it's not a pain to interact with. I guess it's kind of like, there's going to be a spoiler for the end of Metal Gear Solid 4 right here. And don't listen for 30 seconds. I won't talk longer than that. Okay, is it okay with you gentlemen if I talk about this? I'm not spoiling it for you.
Well, yes. Yeah, you are, but I don't care.
Okay.
You haven't finished Metal Gear Solid 4?
We had my Metal Gear discussion
a while
ago. That's one of my, you know, sort of like really tried to like
it. Dude, 4 is so good.
So, I know, but I don't get it.
Here it goes. There's a part in that game where you are crawling through a hot hallway. And you're mashing a button to keep your guy going, and you're interacting with it, and it's difficult and annoying to do, and you're fighting against the controller, but it's conveying you as the person. Okay, right. That's the end of my Metal Gear spoiler. I feel like the way you interact in this game is similar in that, yeah, you might be fighting with the control some, but it would make sense that you just hit your head and fell down. You're not going to be able to whip around and pick up a pipe and hit a zombie on the head. It's a struggle. The only thing that annoyed me about the controls is that I couldn't find a way. I played on Xbox 360 to invert your cursor, and I'm an invert XY guy.
But there's still times where it's just like you have to find the right spot to click on to get it to activate.
But the way they, I mean, to your point, yes, it's really simple. I mean, I'm sure you're talking some of the early interactions, like the first time you encounter a zombie, not so complicated mechanically.
No.
But when I played it the first time, I was like, oh shit! Oh shit! You know, like even though I knew that I was going
to
totally get through it.
But were you shit because you were trying to deal with the controller?
No. I was like,
okay,
yeah. I wasn't ever confused about what I needed to do next. I was just like, oh, I hope I can do this in time.
It could. I will willingly admit that it could easily be an observer's problem, not a player's problem.
I remember I watched the quick look. I think Giant Bomb's quick look, and I was like, pass. Not playing this game, looks stupid, and then
that might even be what I was watching.
My friends said it was great, and
like watching
it had
him like
feel.
Do the like. Well, anyway,
it's
like
not
the police
game.
Opening is what I saw. It's way better to play than to watch, which is weird because you're doing a lot of watching when you're
like
playing.
He's unlocking handcuffs, but instead of like hitting the lock, he's got to hit the chain, and he's like trying to figure out where to hit because he can't. Like it's like, oh, that's not, you know, it's like finding the right
spot.
I'll
spot you $5 if you don't like it.
No, you don't do that.
Well, I'm saying I'll go out on that limb. I would do it for all of our listeners if I had enough money, which I don't.
We don't have that many listeners.
But I do love Arrowhead Water.
Back to the Arrowhead Water, really.
Excellent.
All right. Anything else about Walking Dead?
I'm super excited for the next. What I love about Telltale games, and Walking Dead does this really well, is that they have it plotted out far enough in advance that you finish the first episode and it shows you flashes from the next episode. You don't like that?
I don't like that. No, I don't like
that. Oh, I'm so excited.
Spoilers.
I didn't feel like it didn't spoil anything for me. I'm like, what was. Ooh, that was.
Really?
That was so cool.
I didn't like that.
I love that.
I like that idea. It's very,
like that
it's
on,
very television.
I never watch next week on
Game of Thrones
on television. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, ever. Even Game of Thrones, where I know the books inside and out, and I know exactly what's happening. I'm not going to watch.
You still don't stay post credits?
Nope. So did you turn off Walking Dead, or did you watch it?
No, I watched
annoyed?
It, which I'm glad I did, because I got to see the cool statistics of like, this, and only 27% of people did that. And...
But see, I don't know if there's spoilers either, because I don't know if I'll see that. But I know that that happens, and there's going to be, for me, it just showed like cool action, tension within groups, and yes, more of what I want. It's not like now I'm driving a race car. Which you never know. I don't know. I feel like episodic stuff, it could go anywhere, but it's like, no, they're going to keep doing it.
Yeah. Jeff just noticed
fake
what you said.
Spoiler.
They're building good.
Yeah, I like that. I wish more games did that instead of the... I mean,
here's
we talked about
car?
This on... we talked about this on TRS, but like instead of what BioWare has done with Mass Effect, which is... You know, before you make the choice...
It's the after thing.
I wish it was the moment after I make the choice where they go... Yeah, well, they noticed.
Oh, and even something
it's like, something impactful just happened, but I only acted in the service of the story rather than in the service of my...
You should explain how this works. So you're talking about The Walking Dead, which has a conversation system wherein you choose outcomes, and sometimes you're even choosing who lives and dies.
Right.
Those will be clear, but often choices aren't clear. Like, I had a statistic. There's you can be truthful or untruthful to people, and one of those things like that, I'm generalizing here to avoid any spoiling, I got a thing saying I wasn't what I thought I was, and I was like, what? When did I... Hmm. Like, the areas are gray enough that I thought I was being doing one thing, and apparently I kind of fibbed about something or...
It's like The Witcher. The Witcher had that a couple of times where I was like, I was trying to be the cool dude here.
See,
and it's
cool.
Like, no, you're bad. You're a dick. Like, but I...
You got to be careful who you're talking to.
Yeah.
I really like that.
I read this article the other day on Grantland about The Witcher 2 that made me so angry. I don't even want to go into it.
Well, let's not go into it. But the thin point I'm trying to make is I like the... I think it betrays... It gamifies it when you get all the data pre-decision. Whereas... If I just know the game is noticing what I'm doing and that things it makes me play in
like
service
it.
Of the moment, in service of the story.
And what it does afterwards is then it does it directly says
so and so noticed you lied to them or suspects you lied to them or noticed that you were friendly.
Oh, and the other great thing which Mass Effect would greatly benefit from, I think, is a randomization of your conversation options. So every time you play through, it's like you got four choices, but those choices are going to be in different positions. So it's not like okay, hit B.
It's funny because. There was a whole, I'm sure there was an internal discussion because when that was presented to us originally at BioWare, that was a feature because that way, as a player, you would know what you were getting out of the game.
I also really like the fact that they give you a little time limit.
Oh, yeah.
Because
you're
not just dead.
Because you can actually say nothing.
Yeah.
On Walking Dead, you can say
nothing. You can say nothing.
You can be silent.
Or
sometimes
you feel pressure.
You're
like,
freaking out.
Yeah. What am I going
to
say?
Trying to read them all. And you're like, what? No, I want to be, I said nothing.
Yeah. All right, well, we said next to nothing last week about Oliver North, and I feel bad that we cut that off because it is a serious conversation point. It's an interesting discussion to have because Activision brought in how did he exactly get out of his conviction? He was
The convictions were vacated after he was convicted because of his pretrial testimony
in front of Congress.
So basically they were like, I think it had something to do with the jury that tried him basically couldn't have been completely impartial because of the pretrial testimony that was
gotcha.
Like it'd be like trying to find an impartial juror for like the OJ trial or whatever.
So for those who don't know, Oliver North, who's consulting on Call of Duty Black Ops 2, was a major in the, he served
lieutenant colonel.
Was lieutenant colonel in the United States military.
Yes, and he was a National Security Council staffer at the time that all this crap went down.
And operating 80s. Under who knows what sort of shadow missions within the government, and there were all kinds of implications who was involved. He was overseas selling United States military equipment to the Taliban for their operations in Afghanistan and was convicted of said treason, basically, because he was conducting American foreign policy without any direction.
It was 16 felonies or something he was charged with, only ended up being convicted of three of them, which were all had to do with, you know, accepting a bribe and, you know, some fairly minor charges, basically, that he was ultimately convicted of.
So, well, obviously he has a tremendous amount of experience with the situation to bring to the consultation. As Jeff was pointing out last week, this guy's a criminal.
Yeah.
And he has a real problem with that. And I'll
talk
about it.
I mean, a lot of the problem, it's not just the sale of weapons to Iran, but it was also the other thing that really bothers me is the scandal was called the Iran-Contra scandal, right? the Contra side of it is there were Nicaraguan rebels known as Contras who were sort of notorious for violating human rights, like human rights issues. And the proceeds from the weapons sold to Iran were funneled into the Contras through North because the Contras were basically in opposition of whatever
dictator. Noriega.
Right? I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. I'll stand on that. I'm not 100. Yeah.
Basically funded a secret war.
Yeah.
Basically.
Our country did it.
So anyway, and sort of on this note while we're talking about it, I had a number of you guys reach out to me via Twitter and say thanks for taking a stand and all that stuff. It's really not that, you know, I definitely appreciate the sentiments. It was very nice to.
Well, the thing that I would like to say that I respect the most about it is that you're coming at it from a very informed place, and which is very clear. And you're not making a knee jerk reaction, and you're not. It's not a empty gesture. It is an actual feeling you have based on knowing about the facts. And I think that is to be commended most of all. And it's a very disturbing thing that they've done here. And the fact that it is such a mass market entertainment property mm-hmm. that is sort of tacitly.
But I mean, North still has. Does he still have his own show on Fox News?
Yeah.
He's
a radio show too, right?
I'm making a 30-minute Vimeo movie about him, and it's really touching. And it's going to be on Facebook. I want people to share it. And if you send me $30, I'll send you a box of stuff.
Shut up.
It'll be a bracelet.
And a case of Arrowhead water, right? You're going to throw
that. And then 2 weeks after that, I'll run around naked. But before that, I'm going to have a really sweet 30-minute video.
What's good about Jeff starting this conversation and the fact that you guys out there who listen called my act on it and said, hey, let's talk about this again, is that it did make me think about it some more. And two things. Number one, when Activision was originally selling it, and Treyarch was originally selling it as, we wanted him in here because we really wanted to capture the sense of what was going on in those meetings, and he was there, and he's really the only person who could do that. Then I was saying, okay, I in my mind said, okay, that rings true to me, and he's been, you know, we've been through this situation, we know what happened, and he's been, for better or worse, through the judicial system, as it were.
Right.
And okay, I get that. And he is the right guy who could give all this information. And then they used him as the front man in some advertising. Mm-hmm. And that is a whole other sort of approach. And now it is like, really, you're going for sensationalism because you have a guy who was.
Well, and if he was an unpaid consultant. Like if he was just, you know, like. Well,
no one's going to do it for unpaid.
Well, no. Well, I mean, like say somebody's writing a book about Charles Manson and they get an interview with Manson. I don't think Manson's getting paid for that. I think it's just him going, yeah, I'm crazy. I like to talk about crazy stuff. But it's in the case like this, this guy is, you know, just in my estimation, somebody who was in a position of power, and because of who he was associated with, regardless of what crimes he committed, he was basically put in a position of privilege where he didn't have to basically account for a lot of the stuff he did. I mean, I won't go to get into the whole Scooter Libby thing, but that's like another sort of like, you know.
Anyway. Yeah, it's like if he was a consultant.
Do we care or would we notice if the stuff in the 80s isn't historically accurate? Is that a make or break issue for people that be playing
too,
this game? Like,
couldn't they have used somebody else? Couldn't they have had somebody else who.
Anyone.
Or just make shit up. Like, this is what. Like, that's what they did in. Not the World War II ones, those had real battles, but it's like in this, there was this real battle that this, you know, controversy took place, and here's what was going on secretly with these, you know, covert ops. Okay, cool. I'm in your fictional world. I don't care. Right.
I mean, silver lining for me is that I hope that it inspired some kids to go, oh, I wonder what this hubbub is about.
Right.
And they maybe Google it and look at Wikipedia and go, oh, what the fuck? Right. You know, what the fuck did our country do? You know, it's like.
So at the same time we knock it for that, another interesting piece that's progressive about Black Ops 2 that we didn't hardly touch on at all is that first trailer has two women in it in prominent positions. For one thing, right off the bat, the president of the United States in this game is a woman, which, you know,
that's pretty cool.
Is that the new, I'm trying to think of
the new black?
The new black. I don't want to be offensive when I say that, but that's the new future. Like, what, I mean, after
happens.
We have a woman, we'll have an Hispanic president. It's like, must be the future.
The president thing, I think, does sort of tickle that whole, like, we've, it's sort of a nod of the head of, well, you know, we finally got to the point where when we have the right candidate, we will elect her or him or whomever it is, and we're over that, like, gender specificity of the president. And the second one also applies the same way, is that the fighter jock is this, I forget her name, I should have written it down, I thought I had it written down. So it's a woman also, which is really cool. I think that, you know, while it was weird because it was downplayed, and then maybe I missed it in just because in the first play I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. Of course there's a woman who's a fighter. I never even thought twice about
it. And that's what's awesome. I wish more people would feel that way and that it wasn't a thing. But at some point it was a design decision for Activision. But I like the fact that I look forward to that near future world when I watch that and I'm just like, yep, that's how that is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like I need to apologize for not having been more attentive to it, but at the same time, I hope maybe more people aren't attentive to it and are starting to get to a point where it's like, yeah, that's the way it is. Yeah, of course that's the way it is. How else would it be?
Right.
You know, like, why would it be any different?
Yeah, you're right. Pretty soon it won't even be a thing. But I do applaud them for doing
it. Cool portrayal.
For whatever reason, whether it was a marketing or like, oh, we need to, you know.
And she's a badass.
It's good to have female characters in there represented.
Absolutely. Right. And I think it's a good step. And hopefully we'll see more steps forward like that in protagonists and characters in video games, because we still do have the white guy problem as a lot of the protagonists in these games. Let's be honest. It's still a big problem.
Or the women are the women in Terra, or a game I've been playing, some Skullgirls.
Well, the dudes in Terra are also pretty scantily clad. I mean, if you're into, like, dudes.
Oh, yeah. It's not any less sexualized for the guys.
Oh,
yeah.
Jeff's like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just hope we live to see Cooking Dada.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
All right. Well, we can talk about some Skullgirls. We'll take a break, come back for the last segment. We can talk about some Skullgirls. Anything else you guys want to make sure and get in the last segment?
Saturday morning RPG.
Saturday morning
iOS
RPG.
Game. Yeah, I'll talk about that a little bit.
All right, so stick around. We will come back and wrap up this weekend confirmed.
I feel like we need a theme song of some kind in here.
Master! Master! Chip in your neck. Chip in your neck. Chip in your neck.
Master of the Sandwich!
Theme song. Theme song. Theme song. Theme song.
He's a master. Master. That way. That way. That way. He's the master of that way. That way. That way. That way. He's the master of the Segway.
He's the master of the Segway.
I didn't really eat any asshole flakes this morning. I just sprinkled a little bit on top of my yogurt. That guy over there is playing Galaga.
Spoiler. I less like that because there's a deep cut, like, late 90s Prince song where he goes, "You got a chip in your neck," and which was what I was quoting. And I'm probably the only one that knows that song. But now that I'm
it's called
in a song singing it.
Chip in Your Neck, right? By Prince.
Yes, it's called The Chip in Your Neck. All right, Jeff, tell us about the most interestingly named game in the show, which is
Saturday Morning RPG.
Absolutely.
So it's an iOS game. It is free. My understanding is that it will be multi-chapter, so the other remaining chapters will be charged for.
Sunday afternoon RPG,
yeah, or
Monday
whatever.
Morning.
So anyway, the concept of the game is, like, you're a kid and you fall asleep in front of the TV and you basically wake up in this, you know, classic sort of RPG world that is full of Saturday morning cartoon references and stuff. So, like, some of the enemies and the world that you're in. And so the first tutorial guy that sort of walks you through how to, you know, select combat actions and power-ups and all that sort of stuff is called The Wizard. And it is, like, an 8-bit version of Fred Savage from the movie The Wizard,
awesome.
Which is pretty awesome.
Pick a game.
One of your special powers is, like, the fruit stripes. You can send the fruit stripe zebras, like, stampeding.
So it's not just Saturday morning cartoons. It's Saturday morning cartoons from the 80s.
From the 80s, yes. Specifically from the 80s. So,
although, do they even have Saturday morning? Like, kids have just a friggin' cartoon channel now, right?
Yeah, they have a whole network.
Yeah.
So,
and most of them are actually double entendre jokes for adults.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the cartoons?
The game, or are you talking about in
Well, life? No, just in general.
In real life.
80s cartoons, there was, you know. I don't know. Anyway, it's
we digressed.
It's traditional. I mean, the art's really cool. It's very, you know, 8-bit looking, retro, very colorful, you know, standard RPG interface. Like you can attack and then you've got a backpack full of special items. And like when you use a special move, there's usually like a tap-based mini game or a swipe-based mini game or something. So you're, it's not just like select this, watch your guy do something. You're constantly interacting with it and tapping and stuff. So for free, very fun. I definitely recommend checking it out.
Cool.
Especially if you like those 80s cartoons.
For show.
I kind of want to see it now. I feel like we...
Does it give you one to grow on?
I haven't finished it, so I have not seen all that Saturday Morning RPG.
Does it bust out a Schoolhouse Rock interlude every so often?
I'm just a Bill.
Sport Billy and Sport Willie present
Conjunction Junction. Friends. What's your function?
Let's start over.
No. Yeah.
Christian now is like, what, who the hell am I here with? What is going on?
What are cartoons?
After these messages,
we'll be right back. Yeah. Ding.
It just makes me sad.
Why?
Because it's funny how I'm nostalgic for things that were less convenient. You know what I mean? Like, oh, those were the days.
When I had to wake up early.
It's like, no, now kids get to watch it whenever they want. Like, no, do you want the best? I miss the days when I had to ask my friend's cousin Billy how to figure out how to, you know, do something in Zelda. No, things are way better now. But hearing about, like, old cartoons, it's like, man, kids today, they don't have it as good as we did. No, they have it way better.
Parents used to love Saturday morning cartoons because it meant they could sleep in and they had a, you know, Saturday morning
TV. So now parents can sleep anytime they want? Is that the turn on hub? Meow.
Have you not read books about modern parenting? Evidently, they're just out anyway. They're not even home to be sleeping. It's like kids are just there. It's like, whatever, something happened. All right, so have you had friends over to play some Skullgirls? Because evidently that's the way to play it.
I haven't. So this is my thing. So I'll start by saying I am a fighting game enthusiast, not a fighting game expert.
Okay.
So I've played maybe an hour of Skullgirls, and I don't hate it, but it's pretty close.
Really?
In terms of fighting games. One, pretty close to hating. I'm playing on the Xbox 360, which I don't have a fight stick for. I have a very nice PS3 fight stick. 360.
People are already
lambasting
you.
So I was kind of excited about the game, but not enough to buy it because Mortal Kombat Vita has taken over my fighting game life. And I feel like there are only so many fighting games that can exist. I'm not sure why this game does exist.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Did you play Mortal Kombat on any other console?
Yeah, I played it on the PS3 before.
So it's just re-addicted you.
Yeah.
Because it's the same game.
It's the same game. Well, yeah. I really like the Vita-specific Challenge Tower. I think it's super fun. It's, like, cheeky and corny and, like, wiggle and touch this, but I really like it.
It did a great job.
Amazing. So Skullgirls...
So you've seen 2D fighting games with as attractively rendered and well-animated characters as Skullgirls has?
So, again, the art style is very well done. It's not my preferred style. I don't like characters that look like
that's
that.
Fine.
I mean, not a Darkstalkers fan. I know
very
people
boob
hate
heavy.
Me.
I get that.
And for me, I just feel like the game, while it's I'm sure more competent than I know, just is missing a hook to keep playing. Maybe it is having friends over, or I go online
and it's just fighting game.
It's just Destroy City, but it's not. I mean, Mortal Kombat on Vita or PS3. Gives you a hook to keep playing with the crypt, with the challenge towers, with the awesome story.
I think that's Mortal Kombat, the reboot of Mortal Kombat is the best single player fighting game ever made.
It's really good.
I think they, for the first time, got a story mode right, and there's lots of stuff to do without other human beings.
But the online is great, too. They have the code.
Maybe Soul Calibur.
Things are good. Now, Soul Calibur was great with those rewards and things to do, and I think Capcom tried something along those lines to keep it fresh and interesting with Street Fighter Cross Tekken with the gems and like giving you reasons to go back. And Skullgirls, while it's mechanically sound and great hand-drawn art, doesn't give me a reason to play other than to see that.
Well, and the fundamental thing, I mean, what I'm trying to glean here is, does some of your issue with it fundamentally come down to you just don't like the way the game looks?
That's part of it. I don't like the story. In the arcade mode or the story mode.
Because I think even if I pull out and said, even if I pulled out of the like personal judgment on the art style, I could still appreciate that Skullgirls, like, it is a very well drawn, very well animated, very well put together fighting game that is, you said, why does it exist? Well, it's unique in that standpoint of there are I can't think of a game right off the top of my head that has that beautiful of an HD animation in that sort of like very classic 2D approach.
Blaze Blue or yeah.
Okay.
I got to back up a second. Did you just complain about story in a fighting game?
Yeah, because it was enough to annoy me. Where I'm trying to hit A to get through it, and it's not going fast enough.
Yeah.
And it's like these stupid talking heads that come. And so, again, if there probably are fighting game players out there that are always chomping on the bit for new systems to master and learning new combos and wanting new games. I love fighting games, but I don't get to play them enough. So for me,
that's not your thing.
I'd rather just spend the time learning more on Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade, which I still love, or learning more in Mortal Kombat. And this game, I feel like, is such a weird... I don't know how so many fighting games can exist in one space. And tell me I'm wrong. I'm fine with that. And let me know reasons why I should give it more of a chance.
All right, so then back to the question, then why did you pick it up?
Because friends really were excited about it and said it was cool. And I had friends that were playing it. And like, if you like fighters, you should check it out. And it had this nice buzz behind it of hand-drawn art assets and that kind of thing excited me. And have you guys played it at all? I mean, maybe D-pad might be my biggest issue. Or I know the Xbox 360 is bad.
Dude, but you should totally be playing with a stick. I mean, saying that you don't like this 2D fighting game while you're playing it with a controller is sort of a. I mean,
duh.
I know. My friends all had
it's a little nuts.
And that's why I went that way. But people out there that are liking it, I encourage you to post in the show thread and say what's great about it. And my eyes are open. I would love to like it more and maybe learn the system or see what's unique and rich about it. But when I played it for an hour, I just kept thinking, this is an hour I'm not playing Street Fighter or I'm not playing
Mortal
Kombat.
Learn getting a 360 stick. I mean, if you really want to do your fighting games on 360 because your friends are on 360, then drop $50 on a fighting stick.
Dear Hori, I will say very nice things about you if you get not. I wouldn't. I agree. I should have it on fighting stick anyway. But what I'm more curious about is read on the forums, but I'm more curious what people that I know and relate to and you guys, what do you love about it? What got people so excited? Because it had such a buzz at PAX early. I think it was just the art style, and I wonder if anyone else. I feel like I can't be alone feeling underwhelmed by this game.
This may be a really stupid question, but does Skullgirls have some sort of lineage, like some other media that, like, is there a Skullgirls manga or like Skullgirls cartoon?
No, its lineage is in the hit team that came together to put it out.
Okay,
so
new IP.
But it is new IP, yes. Okay. It's not, but it's not like we're drawing on some like great.
Right. It's just so out there that, like, I mean, character design wise, I thought it might have been based on something. No.
Not that I know of. And I'm sorry. I wanted to talk about it.
Don't be sorry. It's fine. I genuinely think that you should find. Does one of your friends have a 360 fighting stick?
Yeah.
Then you should at least borrow it, take that home, and spend at least an hour with it, just like you do with this. And then make a judgment call. But if you really just wanted to play the Street Fighter anyway, then that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. There's no harm in that. Then are you almost trying to force yourself into liking something you didn't want to get involved in anyway because it's already taking time away from what you'd really rather be spending time on if you're playing a 2D fighter?
Some of that is true, but some of that is that excitement of seeing that new hand-drawn animated thing and getting caught up in the hype train. Like Assassin's Creed 3 is doing with their new trailer, getting everybody hyped. And this game got me hyped. It got me really excited about playing it.
That's like a little mobile two-wheeled scooter thing that you can stand on.
Dean Kamen over here.
I'm just trying to get out of this conversation with some dignity. I was just looking for an out.
That was the worst. Would you please leave it to the professional over here to my right?
Aww.
That was terrible.
For the record, I'm sitting to Jeff's right.
To my right, I said. No.
Well, he's just afraid that he's going to get scalped.
I am, and I deservedly so. I welcome all criticism, but I was excited about it. Friends were saying good things, and I grew up a big fighting game. I played a lot more of them. I was good at arcades. I could hold my own in local competitions. And as I've gotten older and played them less, my skills have regressed. A lot of my friends back in Texas are still big fighting game fans and make that trek. And
yeah,
Evo.
But your friends back home are probably still fans of like really terrible bands, like, I don't know, like Creed.
Why would you say that? It's mean of you. I have wonderful friends, and I spent a weekend with them at my older brother's wedding, and I got to see a bunch of people, and none of them liked Creed. No one. Hey, My friends are good people, and they're good at fighting games better than me, and they got me excited about a game that I took a chance on, Jeff Cannot. I went on a limb, like, I'm going to buy this game, and I'm going to play it, and I'm not going to like it. And I'm going to come on a podcast and say, hey, I didn't like this game, and I'm going to have people yell at me, and I'm going to reply, no, you're an idiot. Just, and then we're going to have this big back and forth.
Speaking of Creed, right, Garnet? Am I right?
Yeah. I knew you were going to go there. You're like I'm just like, I'm waiting for him to set it up.
And you're
like,
a segue assassin.
I'm, Creed?
I'm saying we should have a standing contest for the worst segue.
I'm going to put on my red coat and go home.
Talking about red coat, that reminds me of Assassin's Creed. Oh, yeah.
That was barely a segue.
that was pretty wow. Oh. I think it's really funny that there was initially... The responses to Assassin's Creed 3 have been really interesting. There was initially some enthusiasm for the American Revolution era.
Yeah.
And it was weird. It was almost as if people had suddenly, like, turned coat on... It's like, I gotta stop doing this. Make it go away. As if they had turned their heads on the Mediterranean and Renaissance. Because, look, the whole... Ariel's been on my ass to, like... She's like, you gotta play Assassin's Creed 2. She's like, you will love it. You will love it just for the setting. Yeah. And I think I probably would, because every time I've seen the game, one of the things that's super appealing is how well they got into that and how much there was that was cool there. And then all of a sudden, people were like, oh, American Revolution, it's awesome. We can do something different. I wish they'd done something different, blah, 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 but we're out of that. And then...
Well, what's so great is that they constantly pick eras that no game has ever been set in of this type. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's awesome.
Or in general, yeah.
Well, so then, there's plenty of like games, actual, yeah.
And then the big concerns were, oh, well, are you still going to be able to parkour? Well, I think that the video successfully alleviates any concerns that there's not going to be plenty of stuff to parkour around in colonial cities. There's like, really?
I think that's a really clever solution to that dilemma. I love the idea of these big, wide open environments and jumping up trees,
well,
and
still
scampering
the
up rocks. But it's a series that has been so focused on a very condensed, very densely populated urban kind of metropolis of a certain era. And now you have what looks to be, judging from the trailer, much more open, much more sparse, much more...
In the outdoor
vegetation, yeah, well, of course. But even those cities aren't going to be similar. I don't think they're going to be like that. You know,
they're not going to be as tall. It's not going to be as dense. They've already said. I mean,
yeah,
that was one of my sort of biggest concerns. Although everything that I see, you know, this new trailer included, gets me pretty excited.
They have so much they can play with. Look, they've got outdoor environments that are open. They've got, because by virtue of them being Civil War battlefields, I don't know if you've ever been to a Civil War battlefield, but they even show that scene, which is crazy,
awesome.
Of mm-hmm. all those soldiers lined up facing each other.
Like, wacky guy running around this scaffold. Hey, what's up, guys? Continue your revolution. It's just me.
I don't think it was a scalpel, but I know.
Did I say scalpel?
Yeah. He's a new
You don't use a
hero?
Scalpel to scalp people?
Yes, Dr. Assassin.
I'm pretty sure you do. Go ahead.
He's a new assassin wielding the scalpel.
That seems like the thing you would use to scalp people. The scalpel.
He can like take out your appendix before you even know it, dude.
That could be one of the future ones.
Hatchets are clearly used to cut hatches.
First scene of Assassin's Creed 7. Dude wakes up in a bathtub full of ice.
His kidney's gone.
Anywho.
So they have that. They have the forested scenes. They have wildlife. The scene with the bear looks kind of...
Dude, I hope that there's some Native American like spirit mythology in there, and I'm going to train that bear to kill redcoats for me. I'm sorry. That's not going to happen. I would love to do that.
I don't even know what to do with you guys anymore. I can't take you anywhere. I swear. Such a difficult thing.
Sorry.
The British are coming. The British are coming. Yeah, you got the British. We've got a bear.
And he's not British.
I kind of mashed up a couple of things we were
talking
about.
I do think
about.
It's interesting that he's part Native American and part English. So that they're establishing some cool tension there. And I'm wondering how that's going to also play into the modern time era part of it, of the Templars and the Assassins. I wonder if there's going to be any relationship there. I mean, they're already saying, you know, he has one foot in each world in the Revolutionary era. Could that be foreshadowing that maybe there's like some sort of... mix between like bloodlines between Assassins and Templars. What's happening with that? There's a lot of interesting questions that could raise, right?
Yeah.
And it's also interesting because, the person he's inhabiting has this Native American background. And so he's like, there's all sort of entendres there with the conversations he has in the trailer about, you know, I want to repel all the invaders, but I'll fight for what's right. So it's really interesting. The character dynamic that they're setting up here potentially could be really interesting. It could be a really interesting game. I think it's a very cool
internal conflict. You don't normally see really a character cool like that. Yeah,
exactly. I think that's really cool. What else we got going on? I wanted to briefly promote, if you picked up Starhawk this week for the PlayStation 3, something that's really cool that the developers are doing, which is they're giving away, they've decided to make all of the add-on maps for multiplayer free DLC. And I think that's a really smart and really cool move. As Dylan Jobe down there, who is the director of Lightbox Studio, who made it, said on the PlayStation blog, we didn't really like how in Warhawk, when we released a new map pack, it forced these divisions on our players. And after we'd released three expansions, our player community was pretty fractured. It's really smart of them to approach it this way. I wonder how it's going over financially.
I love it as a gamer. I feel like it's maybe them kind of admitting we don't have the numbers to sell DLC, and this is maybe a way to get numbers into the game, right? I mean, what makes this game a lot of fun while it has a single-player campaign is it's multiplayer, and if it doesn't have numbers to support such a big, robust multiplayer, the game will fizzle and ultimately die. And this is hopefully a way to get people to buy the game and play it. Whereas Call of Duty doesn't need to do something
and
like
stay engaged in multiplayer, because it's saying, hey, we're making play. I mean, in fact, they already announced that they're doing a map pack already, and it's one of the free ones. And that's awesome. That will help build an engaged and active multiplayer community. I'd love to see that happen for them. I think the game's cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
I think the game's very cool. Do you guys want to get anything else in here that we haven't talked about? I know I had something I wanted to talk about, but it's too big to broach. So maybe we'll get into it next week. Did you see the mobile games survey thing, sales report thing that came out that said that 91% of the revenue in mobile games comes from in-app purchases?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
We've talked about this a little bit before. It is something that's coming to light publicly that developers have known for about a year or two now. I think that is a gold mine. It is groundswell of massive amounts of attention is being put on that, and we are seeing the next few years is going to be all about that shit. Microtransactions.
Whenever I hear something like that, I just get this image in my mind of mothers across the country looking at their credit card statement and going, what? Mm-hmm. Like, what did Jimmy charge to this freaking, you know, like he bought.
Well, you saw the scandal with Gree in Japan.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, so if you aren't familiar with this, one of the big social mechanisms for games that was making a ton of money in Japan was a sort of, you had to get the special, it's sort of similar, I guess, if I understood correctly, to the way the pachinko parlors work, but you had to get the special gacha or whatever it is, and you'd spend a lot of money. And they said one guy had spent like the equivalent of $30,000 in a month trying to get the special, to get the ultimate special prize. It's almost like a lottery sort of thing, it seemed like.
Yeah, he's still throwing up, by the way. He can't believe that he did that.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Little chunks of money, it's just easier for people to spend that way because they don't think about it. Whereas if you, I mean, I think an analogy I often think about is, you know, your cup of coffee in the morning, where if you get a black coffee or whatever, you get a mocha or something from Starbucks, wherever, it's $4 to $5. And if someone were to tell you, hey, you can have a cup of coffee every day of the work week from Starbucks, you give me $1,200 now. I think people are like, what? But that might be a really good deal. And I think this type of microtransaction approach is you don't realize what you're spending. It's like, oh, $2, oh, $2, oh, $1, oh, $2. Mm-hmm. And how many people sit and then look back at what they spent?
Yep. Oh, that's exactly it. Makes sense. But the way this landslide's going, people are looking at League of Legends. Mm-hmm. They're looking at all of this action in the mobile space. And it's just going to keep churning. It's just going
to
keep churning.
Oh, yeah.
So
I got a little teeny iOS title I'd like to tease.
Okay.
If we got a second.
And I'll tell you what, we'll do that and then we'll go on to finishing this.
Okay, cool. Just real quick, 100 Floors. It's another free game for iOS. It is a 100 screen puzzle game. And so you're basically each level is a set of elevator doors or some representation of that. And you have to figure out how to open them and go to the next floor. But it utilizes the iOS touchscreen functionality and like tilt and all that sort of stuff. So it's one of those puzzle games. I guarantee you, you'll play it for a bit. You will get stuck. You'll be like, what the hell? How do I get past this? You'll probably resort to a walkthrough. but it's really neat. It's just a really good representation of like what the iOS device can do in a puzzle
100 floors.
Yes.
All right, folks, it's time to bring this episode to a close with finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
All right. So let's see. Jeff Cannata, you want to finish them first?
Sure. My finishing move is going to be inspired by the fact that, as I said, I've been playing a lot of Terra to the point where it's like hurting my life. But also, I started playing the Torchlight 2 beta. Diablo 3 is coming out next week. Civilization Gods and Kings, I just got code for. We haven't even gotten to the crazy part of the year, and E3 is coming up, and there are so many games with such deep commitment levels. I was really into Tribes Ascend, as I mentioned on the show, and I really want to play more of that. There are so many games with such deep commitment levels, and they want to keep you there, and there's so much rich content. I feel like I'm overwhelmed, and we haven't even gotten to the crazy part. You guys were talking about finishing games. Sometimes finishing games is just about being able to go, okay, I can move on to the next thing. So I'm a little overwhelmed.
I can feel you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And all I want to do is go home and play Terra.
All right. And I will be joining you there at some point in time. I'm going to kick up a character there as well. Christian Spicer finishing.
So quickly, for the record, Jeff has drawn a campfire on his show notes, which I think is a Terra. It's like eating at his brain. He's like, restore my stamina. Yeah. Must play more Terra.
It's not that working to my funny. Actual stamina. It's weird.
It's not working. One move, three parts. First of all, do you like ice cream? One, I know Jeff has talked about it, but thank you to everyone that came to Double Jump. I haven't been on since the show. Another sellout, lots of fun. Our guests were amazing. It was tons of fun. I'm super glad that you guys came and liked the show. At the first show, I met a guy from an iOS company. It's two people, and they made a game called Brains.
I played that shit.
I got a free code for that's out on the App Store now, and I played it a beta build and a final version, and it's cool. And if people like zombies, it's kind of like zombies meets Angry Birds to some extent, where you get a reward. You have stars or leveling up coins for doing it in a certain amount of time, and you control zombies and you get people, and it's fun. It's simple. It's fun. It was made by two people, and it looks great.
I've been playing it as well, and it is really cool. And what Christian is trying to explain is that it's reverse herding.
Yeah.
So you have a herd of zombies, and on each level there are some humans, and you're trying to round them up, so to say, by capturing them where they can't escape because they can run faster than your guys, and overwhelm them and zombify them.
It's almost like playing the ghosts in Pac-Man.
Yeah, and
you play as all the
touch
ghosts.
Control works really great because you just like slide your fingers over different zombies, and then you use bounding lines to lay out where you want them to go. And ultimately, you're just trying to entrap the humans to where they can't get away, and then you can get their brains.
And it has the rewards of trying to do it faster and getting coins and that kind of thing. And then lastly, this doesn't relate at all, but I've tweeted about it some, and I don't know if you guys have seen it, but I thought I'd tell people because they've been asking if I'm serious. My wife is pregnant, so that's...
Yeah!
Oh, shit! Congratulations! Yeah.
Cool and crazy.
Who's the father?
I don't know yet. Hopefully you.
Fingers crossed.
Because I am kind of sarcastic on Twitter and stuff. People have been like,
I didn't even see that.
Is this real?
And I didn't see that either. Congratulations.
It's, awesome. It's wow. real. So I look forward to playing even less games.
Sitting there all day going, these guys are such assholes, not even mentioning them.
That's awesome.
Holy crap, dude.
Yeah, I was thinking that when you brought up my friend listening to Creed is when I thought that.
Because that's what they're playing for their baby in the womb right now.
Wow. We should have brought this up way earlier. We should have done the whole like father questions thing. Like, are you going to let him? Which video games?
I haven't
which
thought
order of Star
I'm,
Wars. You're going to.
I'm freaking out about that.
Him,
and no other future date for Double Jump yet. Hopefully, one is in the works. I'm done. I sound super nasally today. I'm so sorry, people. I hear myself, and I'm like, I do sound.
You
like
do sound
shit.
Great. Congratulations. That is really awesome.
Yay,
Jeff Mattis, finishing move.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to follow that one up. I really just.
But he's going to be a grandfather.
Yeah! I'm pregnant. Yeah, exactly. So, no, not really. So there's a this is another indie project that I ran across today that looks really, really cool. Just saw a trailer for it, but you all can too. If you go to YouTube and type in "We Like It Hard Cloudberry," that's I know.
Get that right, because if you mess up.
Dude, I dig that website.
Well, you can type in Cloudberry Kingdom, which is the name of the game, but you will not get served the most recent trailer for some reason. Anyway, this is a game. It's a platformer, cooperative platformer, that does a couple of really cool things. One of which is they created an AI that basically procedurally generates these platforming levels and sort of auto-adjusts the difficulty based on how you're performing, or you can sort of tell it, all right, you know, this is the kind of stuff I want my platformer, this is how hard it's going to be. And the difference between easy difficulty and their most insane difficulty, I think it may be a sort of a tongue-in-cheek challenge, but they basically said if anybody can beat the game on the hardest difficulty or, you know, whatever, they're willing to pony up $1,000. And the AI can actually prove that these levels are beatable that it's generating, because if you just get so stuck you can't get through it, you can just hit a button and it'll actually show you how to beat it. Anyway, Cloudberry Kingdom, I'll probably have more to say about that at some point in the future.
Yeah, but fuck Cloudberry Kingdom! That's what, like, as you break every device.
So, I'm finally playing something on my Vita that I've come back to a number of times, and it's Hot Shots Golf. And it's really quite fun. It is still Hot Shots Golf, and it's an interesting title to use as that example because of all the Vita games. It doesn't jump out at you immediately as going, oh my god, this is an amazing Vita game. But it is really a great version of Hot Shots, which has a lot of hooks in it for playing it more. And I really enjoy playing Hot Shots in the first place. But the other piece that that's sort of built on for me as we're coming up to E3 is that playing with the Vita more frequently, and in particular playing Hot Shots, which looks gorgeous on the screen, it does sort of reignite in me a hope that there could be a generation of games coming that make a great argument for using the Vita, because god damn that screen is gorgeous, and man, this thing can play some fantastic games when it's armed with the right ones. And some of the launch titles were really good, and some of the launch titles worked like that, but it feels like sometimes I'm like, wow, I've got this amazing device in my hand and it just hasn't quite hit its stride.
Quick question about Hot Shots specifically. Is it just a really cool portable version of Hot Shots, or is there anything
Hot Shots has always been portable?
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah. But I mean, is there anything particularly cool about the Vita functionality that they
do? There's a couple of gimmicks.
Okay, it's not really.
It's like one of the cool gimmicks is that you can take the device and put it in a camera mode where you can hold up and use it like you're using it as a viewer and a camera to look around the golf course. Which is totally silly because you're just holding your device up and looking around and it's much easier to just use the thumbstick and the buttons and look around. But it's really well done. It has, you know, if you haven't played Hot Shots before, it has cartoon-like, anime-like characters, but fantastic ball physics and great, you know, great modeling of the way the ball flies in the air. I don't know if the physics are real or not. I haven't played golf in forever, but it feels right. It's a lot of fun to play. Cool. And then, of course, it adds on unlockable shots where you can do all kinds of crazy spin and special shots. And it's fun. It's a very fun golf game.
Awesome.
It has a couple of different shot meters you can play around with. I've kind of landed on the second one, which is the only other one I haven't unlocked, which is like a little circle that diminishes as it comes down to the club. And you try to time it right when it comes to a pinpoint over the golf ball. But it's fun.
Cool. Well,
that's it, folks. That is your Weekend Confirmed. Christian, of course, can be found at Spicer.com and
ChristianSpicer.com, Twitter at Spicer.
It's ChristianSpicer.com at Spicer. Anything else, shows coming up on the road?
No, I don't know. Just follow me. I've had a lot of things get really close and then get shut down by very important people at the last moment. It's
bummer.
The ebbs and flows of our business. But thank you for all your support and everything like that.
Shaq News and Indie Game Channel, of course, for Jeff Mattis. Yes. And, of course, we have our Shaq News E3 coverage rocketing forward very soon. And
I'm scared of that. I'm tired thinking about an E3.
Don't be tired. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be an exciting show.
It always is. It's always fun.
There's so much stuff lining up for us to see. It's going to be amazing.
I can't wait to see your attitude when you're still doing Shaq News dailies and doing E3. It's daily. It's in the name.
No, I know. And I know I'm on the
hook
for it. Should
be called Shaq News Mostly.
Shaq News Daily.
No, they're awesome, and kudos for getting them out, and they're great.
It's like I was telling, you before the show, like the run to get those things done in the morning from nose into the news flow right at the beginning, and then trying to get some outlines done, and then just going and jumping from the camera, and then like on the fly, like while we're reading, I'm like, no, that's not the important part. This is the important part, and we got to get that in. Oh, I still want to hear a time, and make sure we're putting this video, and then it's like, Oh, shit, it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Wow, what happened? Anyway. And, of course, Jeff Cannata, totally rad show.
Yeah, Jeff at Jeff Cannata on Twitter with 2 N's and 1 T.
Every day on Revision 3 and the YouTubes.
Yes, indeed.
Anything else?
You
ready to schedule another board game night?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Make that happen.
I'm ready to make that happen, too.
Yeah.
All right, folks, there you go. That is it. That is your weekend confirmed. Thanks very much for listening, and we will be back next week. I might not be here next week, though. Oh. I might not be here next week.
Promises,
however,
promises.
The two Jeffs will be here, and I believe Zav Damatos will be here next week. So,
oh, nice. All right.
There you go. He'll be returning. Thanks, of course, to our gracious hosts here at Atlantis Group Studio in Santa Monica. Micah there in the booth. Thanks, brother. Doing a great job. Del Rio, of course, in there doing the production. And that's it, folks. Until next week, we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard, don't you know we playing harder? Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. This podcast is brought to you by Random House Audio. Visit www.randomhouseaudio.com to download something new.